And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
I'm afraid of the dark. Well, okay, but not much else. All right, Angel Clark, another unafeared individual living in Acapulco. She makes her living reading books and has like a gazillion under her belt and some horses she's really riding to the finish line. Some people are doing well. This is an awesome idea for those that, you know, can talk. Several of my friends I know would be able to do this. What we need to do is go ahead and just get caught up with Angel. She's been in Acapulco for, God, it's been over 2 years, is it, Angel?
It's been about a year and a half, I think.
It's been long enough. Okay.
I know, it's been a hot minute.
All right, now let's do the Angel Clark bio here. Radio talk show host, syndicated writer, and activist, and lover of liberty, so much that she left America. You know, it's like, you know what, and I'm down here now. Angel has written for numerous sites, including The Examiner and her own personal website, SussexCountyAngel.com. Are you still doing the Sussex County thing?
I mean, I have it, but I haven't posted on it in ages, man. I stopped writing, and, like, all the people I used to write for have begged me to come back, but it's like, I don't have time at this point.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. What you do, I mean, it goes on, Angel Clark is really studly here, she's done a lot of this, she speaks everywhere, she's on CNN, blah, 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 Angel Clark, Woman of the Year. Okay, so what I want to do
Woman
is...
Woman of the Year.
Of... at least a year. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what you and Dave do. You guys, how do you select the books that you want to do in audio?
Well, at this point, what happens is authors mainly come to us and they hear books that we have done and they ask if we would narrate for them. And one of the first things that we look at their sales records and we look at the number of reviews that they have that are positive for the book. Because, like, I don't want to read a book if it's got horrible grammar or if it has, you know, no sales. There's a reason why it probably has no sales because, you know, the grammar is bad or it's poorly written. And that, you know, that's going to make for a bad day for me.
Well, do you ever, like, edit or you try and muscle over the... typos or what?
The books that I record, I make a list of the grammatical errors that are glaring that I find. So, like, I won't do, oh, there's a comma in the wrong place, but I'll do, like, oh, you said was instead of were, you know, and I'll make a list of it and send those to the author.
But, I mean, do you read it the way you edited it, or you just muscle through it, or you send
no,
it to
No, I read it the way I edit it. If it's like a glaring grammatical error, like, you'll pick up on it in the audiobook.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. You know, I'm just wondering, you know, what the etiquette is for reading people's other books. You know, Barry Hess here did one for a guy. He was a retired colonel or major or something. He had to have his say, and he's like, oh my God, this thing was so bad. And it's so you get into style and so on. But how many books have you done?
You know, at this point, it's we've got over 150 published, and
wow.
We have another, I think, like 47 that are coming out on the market in the next 6 months.
How the hell is that even possible? You how many hours a day do you read into a microphone?
8 to 12.
Oh my God. Let's go to Acapulco so I can read. Well, do you got at least a nice view or something?
Oh, yeah. My view is fabulous. The view from my studio is better than most people see from five-star hotels.
That is a pretty bay. I mean, I can see why that was such... I mean, it's really perfect. I mean, it's just this sweeping, big, giant bay, you know, you get... I really enjoy it down there, but I'm not off. I have not, intentionally, have not been off the main strip when I'm walking around. And when we were down there, I heard tell that there was a beach murder. Of course, we don't know. And, it's a big city and stuff happens. But I'm just going, there is another Acapulco that we don't know, but I bet you do.
I mean, I have been to the off the strip places, but I haven't really seen too much violence here. I know that it happens, but they pretty much leave the tourists alone in the areas where I go because they realize that tourists equal money. And even though I live here, Famous Dave and myself, well, Famous Dave at least, he still looks kind of like a tourist. I apparently look like a Mexican.
Yeah, no, you're dark skinned, or at least you pat until you start talking. Do you speak Spanish much now?
It's getting better. My Spanish is not the best. I'd say my Spanish is maybe the equivalent of like a five-year-old child. So, I can ask where the bathrooms are and for the check.
¿Dónde está la casa de Pepe?
baños. You can just say baños instead of asking for the house of pee or the pee house.
Well, where that comes from? I don't know if you know. That was Steve Martin routine back in the 70s,
That's before
he
my
goes,
time.
Yes, and he goes, but like the French, chapeau is hat. Omelette du fromage is eggs. And he goes, it's like those French have a different word for everything. Anyway, it was a joke. But down there, the one thing that was interesting, I'll just be straight up with the people here. There was a guy down there, and he had a T-shirt on, said 420 or something like that. So, gee, I wonder where the marijuana would be purchased. So comes out with, they showed me this big giant bag for like $40 or $30 or something that lasted like everybody forever. And I'm going... are the drugs illegal in Acapulco, or they're kind of tolerated, or it just doesn't matter, or is there, we're going to get that tourist who's smoking a joint? How's the marijuana thing down there?
You can buy it on just about any corner from the right people, but it's all trash weed. Like, it's not good weed, and you can't get good weed in the city. So, I mean, maybe you could if you knew the right people, and I just don't know them. But it's all just junk weed. And from what I understand, it's legal, but it's illegal right now. And they're in the process of passing laws so that it becomes more legal. So it's like right now what happens is it's legal to have it, but it's not legal to sell it.
Yeah, I know how that goes. So I'm wondering the news that we get about the violence in Mexico, and there is on display the federales and their destroyer boat and their helicopters and all this other stuff. There's something going on in Acapulco that's off the radar of anybody that just goes down there. You just know that it's like a secret. There's something going on and you don't know what it is. What is it?
It's a cartel drug hub. Yeah.
So it's control over the local...
If you don't mess with the cartels, you're fine.
That's one thing. Like, you're going into a new culture, and you wind up dead, and you don't even know why. I mean, I'm wondering, messing with them is what? You flirt with the wrong person, you didn't give somebody a cut or whatever, you didn't pay the girl out front when you wanted to get your pharmaceutical in the drugstore or the way. I mean, I'm wondering what is and is not the cartel's domain.
The strip clubs is their domain. I know that. We were looking into opening one, but it turns out you have to be cartel related in order to do that. And I believe the bars are mainly their domain, too.
The hotels, no?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's Viva Las Vegas without the gambling. Oh, I saw a casino there.
Yeah, there are casinos.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Up, 20,000 liberty lovers. You went the wrong place.
Let's kick off Free Talk Live. We hit 20K.
Yeah. That's good. You know, I saw Taryn Lupo has moved up there, and he did a video on the six things. If you're going to move to New Hampshire, you know, don't be a putz by doing one of these six things wrong. And then one of the big things, of course, was come with enough money or get a job while you know, before you even go or something.
And, I know, right?
And but these things, they just expect the community. It's like, you know, well, mom took care of me. Aren't you going to be my mom? So I'm at Acapulco. When you go down there, you probably need less resources. Matter of fact, there was a woman we met down there, Erica, right? And her name, Donna? Erica.
Yeah.
Have you met her?
She Facebooked me. We're supposed to do coffee or something.
I like her. You know, she's just a nice woman. You know, she's a black woman from, I think it was Chicago. Is it Chicago? Chicago. She came down. She has a, you know, full-time boyfriend. She goes, you know what? I'm not coming back. You want to see me come down here? And she has a remote job, something that she does, data entry or something on the computer online. So she just needed a good Wi-Fi, and boom, she's done. Is she going to have problems getting her, you know, internet access down there? Or is that pretty taken care of?
You can. It takes a little while depending on where you're at. So, and if you pay the right people, so it's like we picked out a new place and we're moving. And we're going to have the internet in there before we go. We're moving in like a month and a half.
Whoops. Turn it down.
Was that on our end?
No, that was me turning on my Adobe Audition for the rejoiner stuff. But the I wanted to make sure that people understood you know, what it's like there. You know, you have a nice life, and things are so cheap now. And moving down there, you need to, you know, going anywhere. That's one thing about being young is just, yeah, hey, man, you know, I can, you know, sleep on the floor somewhere until when, you know. And I'm wondering how much of that is true there, because some people are going downstate just like they did with Porkfest. You know, they just go, I like it. I'm not leaving. Well, they go to another country. I like it. I'm not leaving. And I'm wondering how many people do that and how successful they are.
Well, a fair amount of people come down and try to do it. But what happens is they're basically, mooching off of the people that have money.
No, I'm hip. Let's talk about it when we come
out of it.
Well, let's come on there and repeat it. I didn't want you to say, you see, now you're all said. So we'll come back and then we'll talk about moving down there and the kind of resources you need and what you're trying to accomplish, et cetera. Here we go.
Rhodes. It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence, another independence declaring kind of individual. Angel Clark in Acapulco with Famous Dave doing recording books. And that's been, is that what takes up most of your time? I mean, 10, 12 hours a day. I mean, you have a life, right?
Yeah, I mean, this takes up all of my time right now, basically. It's one of those situations where I keep getting these ridiculously great deals on books, and I don't want to turn them down because they're going to make me so much money in the long run. So it's like, I'm just, you know, I figure I will do it all now, because they say what happens is, in this industry, the work comes in, I guess, you know, tides, like the ocean.
Yeah.
And one day you're just, you know, it's high tide and you've got so much work that, you know, you're drowning in it. And the next day you've got nothing. And for the last year and a half, we've basically been drowning in work. And I figure that low tide has got to be coming, but we haven't seen it yet.
Well, you want to build this up because the residual income you have, you know, all of a sudden some author will take off and then they want, you did three books for them and they want to read all their books. And it just kind of, you know, it's, have you had any hits like that yet?
Yeah, we've had some relatively good hits. It's definitely enough to make a living from, and if we were in the U.S., we would be living comfortably, so that means here in Mexico, we basically can live like kings.
You're filthy, stinking rich.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
I have a maid and a cook and a driver.
Translator.
And a masseuse.
And a masseuse! This is, you know, see, the thing is people would go, wow, that's living pretty large. But, you know, your time is valuable. You got to sit in a chair doing all netted this kind of stuff. Get me a masseuse at least a couple times a week or something if I'm going to be, you know, 10 hours a freaking day. And then you, because if you can't just stand there and read or sit there, you're not reading, you know. So, and then you could be reading or you could be washing dishes or cleaning the house or driving around. So it's better. And how expensive are these luxuries?
Oh, not at all. The maid, I think, is like, you know, $4 an hour, and the same with the cook. The driver's a bit more expensive. He's like $11 an hour, but he has his own car, and he translates for us as well. So that's, you know, that's always nice. And the masseuse is, what is she? She's like, she's 25 an hour.
Yeah, well, that's still not, you know, too expensive. I mean, that's, it's not free, but there. This is one thing that I just went last night to an economic discussion group that's gone on for decades. And it's all the, you know, we are with the Republican Party and we've thrown a fundraiser for Rubio kind of crap, you know. And a lot of libertarians and anarchists there and such. And Walter Block's article was of interest last night. You know, we'll talk about that. But these guys, we had the main speaker last night was on sweatshops. And the point that he was making is that, you know, it is the best alternative wherever they are, or they would, you know, not do it. I mean, it's not like they're being court. We're not talking about prison labor camps. We're talking about people having an opportunity to go to work, and they work cheaply because the options there are like not, you know, and then they'll build up and have a thriving economy. And then they move to, you know, from Hong Kong to Taiwan, Taiwan to South Korea to Indonesia, because these others become metropolises because of the labor and production that they were able to do. Let, you know, free the people and let the little children work 10 hours a day. So it was, you know, and that was basically the argument. I'm wondering if there's an industry, all the trinkets and trash, Hetcho and Mako of my cool hats that I got and some other stuff. And I'm wondering, is there manufacturing of tourist goodies there, or is that done somewhere else?
I'm not sure. What I've seen is that everyone has basically the same tourist goodies, but I don't know where they get them from.
I'd like to know. I get a stack of some of that stuff. You just can't. You just look funny with 14 hats on your head on the airplane. The one thing, going down to Acapulco, it's been, you know, Berwick's been down there for years, and, you know, come down, come down, come down. And people are starting to come. But I know what happens. Whenever you see a flow of money and people and expatriate and whatever, there is a team of people going, I know what they need. We're going to get some. So what's the strata of people that's available to help you down there? Oh, somebody want to help you out of your wallet. But, I mean, I'm wondering, it's like the Free State Project is different. You know, they, yeah, come on in, we'll help you move in. We do and kind of get a work and job and, you know, and get you kind of, you know, it's a community thing. What's the difference there in Acapulco? Is it similar, or they just want to take your money?
They were trying to start a community, and the people that are trying to start it, when I interacted with them, I thought that they were all con men and liars and thieves. So I have nothing to do with it. I do not interact with any of them. So,
well, what's them? You mean, is there a them? Is there a group? Is there a secret handshake or a star on your forehead or something? What?
You know, it almost seems like there would be. I was warned, basically, that expats are either completely awesome or completely crazy and horrible. And it turns out that when... I think maybe part of it has to do with the fact that I'm a radio personality. The people that have basically been introducing themselves to me and trying to become my friend have all been people that have been trying to take advantage of me and get something from me.
Yeah. Well, you have something to provide, your celebrity and your endorsement on a lot of stuff. You know, it's like, hey, Angel's down here. And that's kind of what you wanted to stay away from. Anarchapoco is, you know, like your endorsement of something or laying your hands on something or...
Well, what happened is when I first came down here, I got helped when I moved. So I tried to help people when they moved. And I tried to help numerous people. And what happened is the first people that I tried to help completely took advantage of me, practically got me evicted from my home that I had, you know, spent 4 weeks looking for to find the right place. And then they also started trying to take advantage of my friends. So then I was like, well, that's just one person. Okay. I'm going to try and help someone else. The next person ended up also being a con man. The person after that ended up being so bad and in like child porn distribution that the FBI actually came down and got them out of the city. And then the people after that, I tried to help them, but it was too late because the other guys that were here had already cheated them out of all their money. So...
bad experiences by Angel Clark. Well, yeah. Erica, the woman that Don and I made friends with down there, moved down there from, she just stayed. She was from Chicago, and she goes, you know what? I did some ayahuasca, and I'm not leaving. So she decided to stay, and I know that she's contacted you via, you know, Facebook or whatever. Oh, my God. And hopefully you can make friends with her because she seemed like a nice lady. The one other thing is the climate there. We always go in February. Does it get hotter? Is there hotter and colder months, or is it just
pretty much like that all year? There's a slight rainy season in June and July, but it's not bad. It's still 80 degrees.
So are you glad you made the move?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And you know, we'll talk about, you know, how much things cost. I was shocked at how far the dollar went down there. And I don't know how long that's going to go, if that's a steady thing. I mean, your exchange rate changed probably 20 to 40% since last year. You know, and I'm going, damn, your money goes far.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world?
Yes. Okay. What I wanted to do is when we come back, we'll talk some philosophy and the POTUS election here and how much that's hitting your radar screen, if you care. And then the Walter Blocks thing. And
yeah. Oh, hey, did Donna send you that the pillow that I have made for my mom?
No. Do I know?
Because here's the thing. Okay. My mom came to visit and she was like getting frustrated because everywhere we went, I would stop and take a selfie. And then at the end of the day, I would find the best ones and I would tweet them out to my fans. And she's like, do you have to take selfies everywhere you go? So first I had a sheet of stickers made for her that is nothing but pictures of me. And then I had this pillow that I had shipped to her and she got it last night. And I just think it's hilarious. The view of the sunset is the view from my living room. And then the other side is this... You know, it's a fabulous picture of me with her looking on disapprovingly in the background while I take another selfie.
I'm looking at it. Got it. So why? She's complaining you take too many selfies or something? Or
Yeah. When she came to visit, she's like, you take too many selfies. So I sent her that.
Ah! That's awesome. Did you send her both pillows?
Oh, no, that's one pillow. One side is a sunset, the other side is my face.
Very cool. Where do you get this done? Is this a online thing?
Yeah, I got it done at Zazzle.com is the company. They had it on sale, though, so it was like 40% off for the pillow, because normally they want like almost $30 for it or $25, and I got it for like $12.
Okay. I can already tell. I got to do a selfie of me, you know, doing puckering up, giving a kiss on that pillow and give it to my kids or something. That'd be awesome.
I got a sheet of stickers made for my mom for like $2. It was nothing but my face.
Oh, so how's mom? How long did she spend down there?
a week.
So she, you know, I remember you telling us about it on the beach. You know, maybe they might share that a little bit, you know, when we come back. I love this pillow thing. That's awesome. Yeah, I could think of all. I could freak out my kids. That thing could go in the bottom of the closet somewhere.
Oh yeah, I had for my nephew. I had a 3-foot-tall poster made of my face so that I can watch over him while he sleeps because he's like 3, so he doesn't really know what I look like because I've been here now for 1.5 years. And for my niece, I had a pair of sunglasses made that have my face on the lenses.
Oh, man. What? You take too many selfies, Angel.
I know. That's why I did it. I had to.
Oh, you know, I tell you, you know, Mark Victor's wife, Tracy, she's a beautiful girl, and she's doing, she has like an 18-year-old son, and she looks like she's 25, you know? And she takes a lot of selfies to promote her gym fitness thing or whatever she's doing. But, man, that's, you know, she's going to take some pictures. Oh, I'm out of space. I'm going, yeah, I think Angel's an out of space phone person. Huh? Come on. Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's about time to clean this thing out. I'm gonna put them all on my computer, though, because I've got a bunch of pictures on my mom. And, you know, I'm not going to see her again until she wants to come in November. My dad's coming.
Oh, they're coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, see, it wasn't that bad, huh?
No. Oh, they loved it. They adored it.
Yeah, this is, you know, let's talk about, well, let's do the election real quick so we can talk about all the reasons why we want to leave. And then, you know, some of the places down there that maybe you know more than Occoquan. I paid attention when the plant in here, we'll talk about, we're coming back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Angel Clark, famous Dave, down in Acapulco, Mexico. This is, you know, it's interesting to talk to people that were activists here in America that are voluntarists, leave me aloneist, you know, I'm just going to go down here, I might be left alone more. And, of course, Angel and Famous Dave, they did it on just, yeah, we're gone. Anyway, should we tell it gone? And it was, you know, I remember it was a big secret, yeah, we're making a move, and gone. And your fear of making the move, you were just concerned that there was going to be someone, say, not allowed or something? I mean, what was your concern?
Yeah, basically, we thought that if we talked about where we were going before we got there, they wouldn't let us leave the country.
Yeah, that kind of fear just, you know, because you were, you know, prominently on the radio with bunch of Facebook Zuckerberg friends, and you kind of, you know, said, and if you started touting about a lot of stuff, you get turned off in some way or another. So you make it down there, and your parents finally came and visited you, and they were not supportive of you going, I imagine. And
they didn't say no. They were just kind of scared for me. My mom was, anyway. My dad was like, it's about time, man. Yeah. Get yourself up and get out of the country and go make something with yourself, kid.
Yeah, there you go. So, after visiting in your lap of luxury, they're kind of like, wow, I guess this isn't that bad.
Oh, yeah, my mom loved it. She's coming back in November, and my dad hasn't come yet. But my dad goes to, like, a different country every 4 months or something, so he's coming in June, I think. This time we've decided. He keeps pushing it back because he ends up going somewhere else. But this time he's definitely coming in June with my 2 brothers. And
wow.
So
are they older or younger?
My older brother came and he adored it.
You know, this is one thing that I think people should when I was flying out, I paid attention and looked at the bays and stuff there. And I'm going, God, that is really awesome. But outside of that cove there that is Acapulco, it's like nothing. I mean, you're out in the desert. It's like you get outside of Phoenix, and you're outside of Phoenix in the desert. And I'm going, I'm wondering how isolated is it? How far up and down the coast before you got to, you know, other than the little area where the gazillionaires are by the airport. But, I mean, how isolated is Acapulco to the rest of the country?
I've never left. I mean, I've gone to, like, Mexico City and stuff, but, like, I haven't taken a trip, like, outside the city for the day, right? It's always been like, okay, I'll hop on a bus or a plane and go up to Mexico City, but I haven't just like, you know, I don't have a car. I use a driver. And I haven't had a reason to leave the city since we moved here other than, you know, going up to Mexico City for a concert.
Wow. And the comfort level of going to Mexico City, because Mexico City is like 3-4 stories of flat roofed ocean of dwellings. It is just enormous.
It's too fast paced for me. I don't really like it. It's too overwhelming for me.
What's the population of Mexico City?
They don't really know. I think it's estimated around 52 million people.
Yeah, no, ridiculous number. Ridiculous.
Yeah, but they, you know, they don't all have papers from the government, you know, permission to live, so their numbers aren't exact.
Yeah, no, you know, tens and tens of millions. I mean, it is just enormous. It's just I'm not even sure how they feed them. I was looking for more agriculture as we were flying in. I didn't see that much. I don't know where the hell they're shipping in their food from. So, and where do you guys, and there's a lot of fresh, that's one thing, the food in Acapulco, I was paying attention, and I was really impressed with the quality, and it was very inexpensive. You can do like a 5-course, man. We were just, you know, you sit there for 2 hours for a meal, Don and I, one time, and it came out to like, I don't know, $25 or something, you know, and I'm going, are you kidding me?
And that's the expensive restaurants.
Yeah, no, well... Let's put it this way. They had really good, nice yogurt, fruit smoothies and so on that were $3. And we just lived on those for, you know, a lot of it. And I felt pretty good health-wise. It was, so is the food locally something? I saw a guy caught a swordfish. He didn't even get it on the beach before some gringo bought it. And, you know, fed his family or had a party or something. And so is there a lot of fishing there? I didn't see a lot of fishing boats.
Yeah, there's a ton of fishing, but a lot of the fishing is all done in a different part of the city. So you were, you know, tucked in the left side of the little bay, and the fishing boats kind of all congregate on the right side.
Okay. And I see some smaller boats, but you don't see this big, giant industrial fishing thing. It's just a couple of guys in a boat with nets or whatever.
Basically, yeah. There's also a bunch of food that is shipped in from Japan. They have a really good trade with Japan here that goes on. I don't really understand why, but, you know, they have boats that are coming in from Japan all the time. And the fruit just grows off the trees here. So it's like they had a peso collapse and it didn't really affect. I mean, it affected people here, obviously,
but not the
poorest. No one died of starvation because the food grows off the trees.
I mean, literally, it's we had mangoes here. We get them for the kids, you know, they're sliced up and then a little package of whatever at the grocery store, and they're not ripe. And we've had mangoes that you just pick or they fall off the tree and you make a smoothie. It's not even in the same category. And I'm going, holy crap, is this what a mango is supposed to taste like? And they're just, you know, everywhere. So I'm going, okay. So starvation is not like a thing, you know. But there were some poor people. I was surprised that you didn't see more poor. I mean, you know, kind of, you know, like the homeless on the corner thing, you know, begging for, give me something. I mean, you see them every now and then, but there's not, I don't see the poverty that somebody might associate with poor sections of Mexico. Does it exist? Or is everybody employed? What?
Everybody's poor.
Yeah. Everybody's equally poor.
Basically. I mean, I would say a large majority of the people here are, in fact, poor. So it's like there's very little to compare it to. They do take care of their own people very well. So it's like there's a sense of community in the culture here. You know, it almost reminds me of like the 50s in the U.S., but I wasn't alive in the 50s. So it's from the TV version of the 50s, yeah. Right, where the woman like stays at home and cooks and cleans and the man goes out and makes the money if he can find a job, because there are very few jobs here. But so, it, you know, the kids are all very well loved and taken care of by the community. You know, no one messes with children. And they give, when there are homeless people, they give them food and stuff I've seen quite often, but it's, you know, there are a pretty fair amount because they can just sleep on the beach here.
Is there a welfare system at all, or Section 8 housing, or any of that kind of government subsidized something?
No, of course not.
So in Mexico, just there's no social, you know, layer of net of something?
I mean, they probably have something in the country, but I haven't seen anything like that in the city.
Yeah, they don't want to.
They have some areas where the housing is really, really poor, where it's, you know, like some pieces of plywood and pallets of boards put together, and that's, you know, that's a house. And they have areas where, you know, entire, basically what you would call in the U.S. developments are just pieces of wood thrown together. But the people are happy. They live their life and they celebrate because life is good because they're alive.
You know, that's one thing is every week or some festival or something. I mean, how many, 52 weeks, how many of them are occupied by some party, festival, holiday?
I would say pretty much all of them.
As long as
you don't need to have a festival to party.
Well, I tell you, they ran out all of the immigrants from Arizona with all their stuff, and I remember there was a lot more parties. You know, it used to be, man, there was always some excuse for something, and that just kind of went out of vogue, and we're poorer from it. I'm feeling bad. We were partying a lot more. We'll be right back. Did we lose the network?
I need you. I've got to break free. God knows.
Okay, we're trying to be connected. Our internet, when I was a guy out there in the thing. Are you there, Angel?
Sure.
Oh, my goodness, we just made it. You know, the internet just went out. I go, what the heck? And we're resetting everything. We look out, and there's some technician back there in the alley, you know, banging away on wires. Hey, man, what the hell? Is this Acapulco or what? The communication. Yeah, go ahead and just restart that. It's recording, so just let it go. It's all right. What we're going to go ahead and do is this last segment, and we'll talk a little bit post too. But I sent you the article, Libertarians for Trump by Walter Block. Now, Walter, why this is interesting, Walter Block was down at Acapulco and got a Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that and spoke a little bit, and I know met Ayn Rand kind of thing. And I've known Walter. He's one of my early guests from 03. I mean, he's a very famous libertarian defending the indefensible, you know, like the drug dealer, the prostitute, and the corrupt cop. I mean, kind of thing. And it was great to see him. He's always, you know, entertaining. But I remember when they were doing Obamacare, he wrote a note. And I was reminded of this last night when somebody said something. I go, I remember. Walter came out and said, look, you can have Obamacare. Nationalized, socialized, health care, don't care as long as you stop bombing people. If you would bring the empire home, we can have some national health care. But until then, I can't support you. So that was an interesting way of looking at it. And then he just came out with this Libertarians for Trump. And I just know Angel is paying attention to everything presidential here in America. Tell me your opinion about or do you even know?
I'm disgusted. I am disgusted. Seriously, Libertarians for Trump? Are you kidding me?
Well,
I mean, it's laughable.
But he's the lesser of evils.
Screw that. I don't like evil at all.
Yeah, but why? Yeah, this is. What about politics in Mexico? Does that raise up to your radar screen? Do you care?
No, I don't mess with it. I learned in the U.S. after the cops started targeting me that, and politicians started targeting me, that after I leave the country, that's when I'll start criticizing. So, you know, when you live in the country, I'm not going to bash it until I'm out.
Yeah, it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. Well,
yeah.
So would you recommend, I mean, who would be the ideal person coming down there other than I just got a crap load of money and I want to buy a good view? But, I mean, you come down there and you're going, yeah, if you're under 40 and have no money, don't come. If you're, you know, 18 to 25, well, really, the young people probably wouldn't be the place for them just to plop down.
Well, there are no jobs here.
You gotta bring it with you, huh?
So you have to basically have a job where you make your money on the internet or through some kind of company or, you know, where have a job that you can do from home.
Yeah.
And that's this economy basically is not built to support a bunch of unemployed, smooching Americans whose parents kicked them out.
Yeah. That's New Hampshire. So
here's the thing. I'm not really a community-based person. I don't like people, Ernie.
Why? Everybody likes you.
Well, that's fine. They can like me all they want, but I don't like people. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to live in a community full of them. You know, I sit back and I watch the crap that goes on, the drama that goes on in these communities, and it's, you know, it's like it gives what you're trying to do a bad name.
Yeah, whenever I'm asked to join a community or go and we can buy and the homes of and property and we'll share and kumbaya something, I'm going, look, man, you don't want me as a neighbor. I mean, what happens when my sons come visit with their dirt bikes? You know, I got 15 zillion grandkids screaming and running around and whatever. You know, what happens if we're, you know, I want to share the in this and I break and you do? What's your conflict resolution? I mean, on and on and on. You know, it's a private property thing. But Kokesh is up in northern Arizona. He's got him 10 acres and a dream, and he's building sapioponics, you know, earthship houses of we're up here building, and Don and I are going to go visit him Sunday and see what's up while we're up there doing a mini vacation. And I'm going, okay, there's attempts. And what would be your expectation of how this will play out?
Oh, it's going, you know what?
Doesn't matter.
I will say it like this. It's more difficult to put together than people think. And I don't really expect any of them to work. I don't consider the Free State Project to be one that is working at this point.
Based on what? You know,
based on what it was that they said they were trying to accomplish in the first place.
Which is what? Take over a government or something?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. There's nobody coming down. We're going to take over Acapulco. So is Berwick and these guys, they go down there? Are they buds with the local cartel / mayor / police chief fed something?
I don't know, man. I stay out of all that. Like I said, I just do me. You know, I just work and do my audiobooks and enjoy my view and enjoy the food cooked for me by my maid and make money.
I'm hip to that. You're in a unique position. Did you know you were going to be doing the audiobooks when you went down there, or is that just kind of something that developed?
Yeah, we had started, we had done like, I think, maybe 8 in the U.S., and we knew that was going to be our focus, and we had, you know, a bunch of them scheduled, and we knew it was going to be a great way for us to make money, so we just, you know, we just really started throwing ourselves into it when we came down here.
Well, that's... I'd love to have you in my head for 8 hours. you got great. You know, Donna has a really good voice, too. And I'm trying to encourage her to do that. And so this is a livelihood for someone that has the ability to do, I mean, just to talk and be clear and pronunciate blah, 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 and, you know, correct grammar when they need to.
You have to be a good storyteller. You have to... You know, there's acting involved and character voices. You know, I just got done last night narrating a book between a Texas woman who was murdered, and she, you know, ends up in Alabama with a 85-year-old little black lady who can see ghosts and talk to ghosts, right? So it's like, how do you do the voice of an 85-year-old Alabama black woman?
You watch a lot of movies from that era. would be it. Well, give me one. Give me some.
Well, I did her voice kind of like this, you know. So she would sit down and she would talk to them like this. But so it's like when you're telling the story, you have to make it so that people can separate the characters in their head.
Yeah,
as
no,
they're
I'm
listening.
I'm hip. I'm an audiobook guy when I can. I just matter of fact, I just went yesterday and got me a new Bluetooth headset because the ones that go around the neck. That's the only time I can listen to books if I got a nice set and you're not hearing all the distractions. And so I had to go do that because I got a bunch of books building up again because I dropped mine in the pool. And that didn't work out, but I'm really interested in following up with you, Angel, as you and Famous Dave are living the life, because at some point you're hoping to have enough that their residual income, you can just kind of take a vacation and chill a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, what we're going to do is right now we've got so many contracts, we have to finish the contracts that we have, and then we're going to start doing 1 month traveling and 1 month, here, recording and working. And then we'll, the next month we'll pick somewhere else to go.
And Angel was nice enough that when she can get to it sooner or later, sometime has it, Miskatonic Manuscript by Vince Aprinowitz. And I want to demonstrate, and maybe Angel be our woman, we'll do contracts with her and stuff, that things that need to be done in an audiobook that aren't. A lot of authors don't have this. This is like a new thing for many of them, and demonstrate the power of this and, get her some more work. But it sounds like she's backed up for freaking ever already. So, it's the kind of problems you like to have. Do you miss America really in any way?
I do miss the food, but that's it.
What food? I'm trying to get away from the food here. Well, what is it you miss?
Just little things, like I miss fruit snacks. I can't find fruit snacks in this country for the friggin' life of me, man.
Fruit snacks?
Yeah.
Is that a packaged thing?
Yeah, like Gushers or something. I can't find them.
Oh, well, now you know what Angel needs in her stocking.
Gushers.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Angel. Hold on a second. I want to talk to you. Yeah, next, it's Trump Report. Trump Report. Next 2 hours of the Trump Report. I'm sure Angel will be tuning in. We'll be right back. Or not. So the American politics and economy and news of every, does that have any impact down there much at all?
I mean, not really. Basically, it's just like our driver talks to us and he's like, man, that Donald Trump is one racist guy. And we're like, yeah, and that's pretty much it.
And I never got the impression he's racist. It's that America thing, immigrant America. I love the Mexican people. They're great people. They're great people. Make America great again. They're great people, And so I'm...
You're good at that.
They're great. He doesn't say anything. He never says anything. I tell you, his big support at this meeting last night, everybody's asked, okay, Ernie, what's this with Trump thing? Because you have one guy's pushing, Rand, he's our man. Oh, he's got, okay, Rubio, he's our man. And no, anyway. And I go, so now is it Trump? No. Okay, why? What's the difference is what? Well, why do you think he's doing so? I mean, I go, it comes down to one thing. I mean, think about it. You had 2000, the left was all freaked out. The Supreme Court decided Al Gore wasn't president kind of deal. You have enormous election fraud that was going on in 2004. That was like a big thing here in Arizona. You have in 1996, they were screwing around with the election. Pat Buchanan was doing whatever. Steve Forbes came in. They just put him on the ballot when they couldn't. Blah, 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 blah. Then you got 8 and 12 with the Ron Paul thing. And now finally you have, after all this abuse, the voters are like, you don't like him? Who do you don't like the most? Okay, that's who I want. Oh, it's because of immigrant, because nobody cares what he says. The more they attack him on the more stupid stuff that he says, the higher his ratings go. It's just a repudiation of the government, and he just represents it. It's really no more complicated than that. The more you say you hate him, the more we like him, which might be a psyop in and of itself.
It's laughable, but that's what it is. And this crap that Walter Block wrote is just, I thought better of him. I really did.
He's coming on. I think Donna, it was the week of the 28th or something. It was just, we were full up this week and whatever. But anyway, Donna dealt with it. He wants to come on, so he's going to come on. I've had him on plenty of times. All right, Walter,
You know, by then the fire will have it, you know, pushed it out, pushed him out, or he embraced, or they got a big giant organization of a pack with a gazillion dollars, or I don't know. You know, but it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because some people like, yeah, you know, I can see what he, we're going to talk about it. It'll be fun. And then the next 2 hours, it's just all Trump. Every Thursday, Trump. Think of this. There's a local Ron Paul supporting doctor guy. He just, you know, from that steel high-rise building family stuff in Philadelphia, so they kind of, and he understood. He goes, I know what's going to happen. As sure as you were about the Levolution, I can tell you what's going to happen, this Trump thing. This is like last June. And he goes, I have Trump sitting around my Thanksgiving table, man. I know how these guys think. And I read The Art of the Deal, and I know what he's going to do. It's going to be all this bombastic whatever. Then there'll be the handshake phase. Then there'll be the quiet. I mean, it's a plan. He's got this play. He's doing this stuff on purpose. And I'm going, all right. So he goes, oh, let's do a show. Every week I can come in, you know, and I'll, on my way to the office, we'll do a morning thing on Thursdays. And I go, okay. Donna gave us the stats. It's like 30-something shows, 50-something hours, plus 15, 20 hours of podcast bonus. So I've been trumped up since July. It is like, I get it. And he hasn't said more than four things in that entire time. Make America great. Wall. We don't win anymore.
And ban the Muslims.
Well, I kind of get the idea. What he's doing is he's one-upping them before they can even do anything. Yeah, but what about this? Yeah, kill them and their families too, okay? Now what are you going to say? Waterboard? Shit, man, we can do some cutting in our torture. I mean, he's just always going one more.
Well, so, you know me. I've been saying since, I think I've been saying since around 2013 that Hillary would have this next election in the bag. So,
well, I think they definitely thought that. I don't know what's going to happen now, but
I don't see because of the delegate system. I don't see them giving it to Bernie. I mean, I see Hillary still getting it. I think it's gonna be close, but it's going to be Hillary. And then, of course, she's going to win the election, because who in their right mind would elect Donald Trump
or Hillary? Why? You got this woman thing going on or something?
Oh, no, I hate her. It's just that no one can beat her.
And, you know, that's
realistically looking at it, they're not
going
to win.
This is my thing. I'm going, it's going to be Hillary and Jeb, Hillary and Jeb, Hillary and Jeb. Well, Jeb pulls out, aha, and I go, hey, he ain't done yet. It's not
over. I thought
over.
It was going to be Hillary and Jeb too.
And it still may be. I mean, that's kind of the argument. I'm not giving up on my man.
I mean,
Jeb.
All he had to do was stay in, and he would have had it in the bag because of who he is.
Yeah, but I think he sees that the way to do it is going to be different. I can't imagine. I think they're afraid of 9/11. I think he knows. He's got some dead man switch on something. He's alluded enough that he knows.
Dave says that's what he said, too.
Yeah, I think it's a 9/11 thing. They got, you know, he's got a dead man switch. They do something, it all comes out. And when he comes president, he's just negotiating on how he's going to, you know, do what he's going to do. Because whatever he wanted, or whatever he was, his goal, he already accomplished it, whatever the hell it was, or he wouldn't have even done this. So I just got to give him some props. He's not a total idiot, and he knows, and they know he knows, and they're freaking out. And the Karl Rove of the planet. Oh, there's a series you know about called House of Cards with Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright. Do you watch that?
I'm only about halfway through season two because I ran out of time.
Okay. The new season just dumped, and we're like four episodes in, and it's at right now. It's running for 2016 president, okay?
Oh, and nice.
So it's just, it's so NSA surveillance, Google search crap. I mean, they're bringing in everything.
Yeah, they've been on point with that show. They are really good with that show.
You know what happened? Kevin Spacey did an interview one time, and he said, you know what Congress is? I've been there. He did a lot of research, and he's talking to staff, and they tell him all these stories and off the record, and kind of, and this is in your script should be, and this guy did that. And it was just so, he goes, they're all just bad actors. And I'm going, you know, it is so insightful what he's doing. And you wish it was only half that bad. I mean, or twice that bad, or 10 times that bad. I mean, it's so, you know, so bad. All right, I got to get to my next hour. Angel, thanks for spending time with me and just hanging.
Nice chatting, Ernie. We'll talk again soon, okay?
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now, Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, F from the B, E, A, U, T, full studios of Freedoms of the National Streams, Phoenix.com. That was a good one, wasn't it? All right. What we're going to do is what you all been waiting for every, all week. You wait. And what do you want to get? Some Trump report, Dr. Frank Tambourine Trump report. So Dr. Frank is in, and last night we were at a discussion group. They were talking about the benefits of sweatshops. You know, the point, hey, man, they had a job. Somebody paid them money that was more than whatever else they could do, and it was voluntary, and what's your problem? So we're going to have that gentleman on in, oh, Donna, in that card is in my jeans or on the top of my dress. I meant to give that to her last night to send him. You know, I told him to get an email this morning, so let's do that. So this is, we're going to have that gentleman on. That was an interesting, we might talk a little bit about that and how that applies into the economy and the POTUS race 16. But Dr. Frank was there, and we're all talking, and we had a little conversation about libertarians for Trump. Walter Block, it's interesting. Walter Block, you know, well-known anarchist of Man, I'd None Ya, and he's a professor, and he's written several books, you know, defending, freedom, and for him to come out, but I remember him giving, doing an article about when Obamacare was going on, and he said, you know what, I'll give you nationalized medicine. You want to do that? You want to have health care for everybody? Not a problem, as long as you stop the empire. You bring back all the troops and stop invading everybody and everything, and we'll talk about it. You know, I consider that a good trade. Let's do that. Now, of course, they don't want to do it. So this is, I think, the same kind of thing. He's going, yeah, you know, Trump's not as bad as the rest of them, and kind of, you know, libertarians should be for Trump. And I'm going, you know, a lot of liberty going, ow. So by the time we have him on, he can't come on until like 28th, I think it is. So when he comes on, we're gonna drill down on this, but I'm certainly getting a lot of other people's opinion. What's your opinion, Dr. Frank?
About
libertarians for Trump, man. You enjoy?
I think that's,
you gonna get a badge?
Yeah, I want to get a nice shiny badge, card carrying member.
Yeah, learn the handshake.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's probably about time. I think the Libertarian Party, like the Republican Party, is going through this split. You know, Republicans didn't see this coming in a sense, and Republicans are fighting all day. Every day on the show, I talk about how Fox News and the Republicans are split themselves about how to understand, accept Trump. You have traditional Republicans that are breaking for Trump more and more. They felt it perhaps inside their bones. They just didn't have a vessel, an avatar, so to speak, to follow through with. And Trump is that person. You know, for many of us, it was Ron Paul. But I think for many of the neocons, it, for different reasons, for later on in the show, I think they finally woke up with Trump. And I think the libertarians are going through the same process. You know, we're having libertarians that we all got along. We still get along, but we all followed the same tenets. We were all under the banner and the umbrella of Ron Paul and like-minded liberty folks. And then Trump comes and it's splitting up our group. You know, the fact that myself having such support for Donald Trump and yet others just still cannot understand how you can have a libertarian for Trump organization. Keep in mind also that I think this process is basically illuminating, Ernie, you know, this fissure about how we get to become libertarians. You know, I think there's a certain anger that's there for some and maybe not others. I think this is why we were seeing a split in the very beginning when Rand Paul attacked Donald Trump right out of the gate and split the Libertarian.
Who told him to do that?
I have no idea. You know, that was fascinating was the first debate. It was the first debate. And I remember they were doing predictions that, you know, and remember, it was a wild card. Was Donald Trump going to sink? How would he do? Who was going to do what first? And Bill O'Reilly, I can't believe I'm starting off this morning with Bill O'Reilly. But Bill,
Bill, sorry, I threw up just a little bit.
Yeah. But Bill O'Reilly, I still remembered. And he gave his prediction. And it was he was very thoughtful about what he thought was going to happen in this as we moved into the season. And Bill said, you know, I predict one thing. I can tell you right now. Rand Paul is going to go after all gloves off on Donald Trump. And I have to say, I remember hearing that. I recorded it. I think I played it on this show. I was flabbergasted. I'm thinking of all the candidates to bring up. Why Rand Paul? You know, on Fox, there were 17 candidates. And he's like, Rand Paul is going to go after him. I didn't see that coming. I'm telling you, that part I did not see.
I think it was an assignment of somebody to influence somebody, whether Rand knew it or not, that somebody told him that would be a good idea. We got the focus group of you're not supposed to do anything else but. And it's like, all right, here's my job. I'm going to be the Trump slayer. I'm the Lovelution is going to go kick ass on some Trump, you know. And these guys, they so took for granted this voting block for liberty that they didn't understand it. You know, I don't think... I think Ron understood it probably more than most, but nobody around him. Mm-hmm. You know, any experience I have with everybody around him, close in the campaign, high up in the campaign, all these guys, there were some that got it, but they had marching orders. And their marching orders were, in the end, you're still a Republican in the party to do what, you know, blah, blah, blah. The only time I've ever seen that trend bucked, has been Trump. He's like, don't care what you guys think. You're going to be riding my coattails. I'm going to ride in yours. We brought in, I mean, there are so many millions of people that have come in because the Republican Party keeps screaming, we need young and youth and vitality of and diversity and the kind of, and Ron Paul brings in the freaking most widest, diverse group of young people ever, but they had all their own plans. No, we don't want them to have their plan. We want them to be our beachas for our plan.
And you know, the problem, Ernie, is that it's the arrogance of this establishment because they honestly believe that every time they lose, every time that, you know, George Bush had a hard time originally, it was only, you know, he ran a second time and won because we're mired in, you know, in the Gulf War. I'm sorry, in the, you know, 9/11. But John McCain and then Mitt Romney, I mean, they keep losing. And when they lose, they don't sit back and listen to where are their Republican voters. Where is it? Now, these voters are the voters that are now all coming out for Trump. All these voters that have not been there for two or three or four election cycles. These are Republicans that just basically disappeared. And the Republican base didn't care. Or the establishment didn't care where these people were. Well, they're all showing up for Trump. The question is, where were they? It's because they were not there for the candidates of Mitt Romney, McCain, and the rest of the establishment. But the arrogance is that this establishment doesn't believe that it's them that's the problem. They keep thinking, well, you see, we have to double down on our policies. The reason we're losing members is because the Mexicans don't vote for us. And why? Because, you know, we're being pegged as racist. We can't have that happen. So we have to double down and we have to force amnesty down our base's throat. We have to allow this sieve of a wall and have people come in. So now granted, that's another talk maybe for later today or for The Economist that we heard last night. You know, there's definitely arguments about having illegals come here, about having third world people come and how it boosts our economy. That's another issue. That's a very good, and I've heard those responses, and there's some sense behind them. But that's, although that guest might be correct with the money, with the history, with perhaps that it is economically positive for a country. But at the end of the day, though, what this is about is not necessarily common sense fiscally. It's about just knowing that you have control of the borders and that we have control over the culture. So it's more of just who's, you know, we just need somebody like an adult in a room to say, okay, let's start taking inventory, like audit the Fed. Let's audit this country. Let's just say, okay, where are we? Because no one feels like we're in control. That's what this Donald Trump issue is with the border.
Because we're not.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, exactly. The people know this, and this is their opportunity to strike back! Strike back! That's all it is.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, well, I see a whole lot of people that don't pay me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy's too fat.
Get over it! Yeah!
Get over it! Get over it! Get over it! Be independent, not dependent. Get over it.
You know, this is the old libertarians for Trump thing. Man, that's not going to go away anytime soon. You know, us talking about that, because that is definitely, you know, on people's minds. I talking to people, they're like, "Well, you guys," I'm like, "You're still voting, so I don't want to play." You know, there is a in his article.
Who's
Walter Block. Walter Block says, "Let's see, but the perfect is the enemy of the good. It is our goal to throw our weight behind the candidate who has a reasonable chance of actually becoming president of the United States, whose views are closest to libertarianism." And I can't count how many times I've heard this before. It's always a lesser of evils, that kind of argument. And I'm just, I can't go that far. When put in this way, it is closer that the Donald, it is clear that the Donald is the most congruent with our perspective. This is true mainly because of foreign policy. Now, this is Walter's argument right here. And of the three, foreign policy, economic policy, and personal liberties, the former is the most important. As Murray Rothbard and Bob Higgs have demonstrated over and over again, U.S. foreign policy determines what occurs in economies and in the field of personal liberties. Foreign policy is the dog that wags the other two tails. So the point that he's making is that the support for Trump can be based solely on he's not as warmongering as the other ones. That's his point.
Well, two thoughts about the libertarian assessment with them. One is that the speech I gave to the Republican base, this was at the local precinct committee chairs that all came together. Actually, it was the both parties all in Chandler and Ahwatukee here in Arizona. So it was a few hundred people showed up. I made videos of Freedom to Fascism and brokered a deal, believe it or not, with the head of the precinct that if I was able to have some of the Ron Paul movement, new precinct committee men, which were joining back in 2008, 2010, to support this one candidate who was open to Ron Paul and the Ron Paul people, as they used to call us, then he would give me a time slot, a full half hour to give a talk to this group, which was almost unheard of back then. And I did this a few years after the Ron Paul movement in 2008. And I let the dust settle for a bit and then decided to give a talk because I knew this movement was just starting. They thought this Ron Paul thing, I'm sure many of you who were around for that time, they just thought this was just a little flash in the pan, whatever that was about. This Ron Paul old guy, it's how people look at Bernie Sanders now. You know, Ron Paul, he just He's just some old guy rallying up people, young people who just want to smoke weed. That's pretty much all what they thought that libertarians were about and what Ron Paul was. So they had to come to terms. And I decided to explain it to them that this is not going away. If you thought 2008 was something, wait until 2012. This is coming back. They didn't believe it. I couldn't talk about it in 2008 because, you know, they were still sore about losing with John McCain. And the Tea Party was just getting started with Sarah Palin and this sort of thing. So I waited 2 years and then gave this talk. And I explained to them what is happening. And one of the things I did was I explained to them the Nolan graph, which many of you know is the world's smallest political quiz. And in essence, if for those of you who don't know, I'm sure most of you know, so give me a second. It's 10 questions that they ask you. 5 questions are about economic issues, 5 about economic issues, so social and economic issues. And basically, they're asking you, what is your feeling about each of these 5 questions about the role of government? Should the government be involved or not be involved? And they score you. And the point of the Nolan graph is that Professor Nolan, who just died a few years ago, he was a famous political scientist, and he came up with this concept that politics is not simply left and right, where you have we have conservatism, which believes that social issues should be conservative and economic issues conservative, and liberalism, they believe that economic issues should be liberal and social issues should be liberal. So, what he was saying is, what if that you want government in both? You want government in social issues, and you want government in economic issues? Then you'd be a fascist. Whereas a liberal wants government out of the bedroom, out of social issues, but they want government in economic issues. Whereas a conservative wants government out of economic issues, but in social. So in other words, you know, a liberal wants government out of your bedroom, but in your wallet. A Republican wants the opposite. But what if you're consistent and you want government out of both? God forbid, you want government out of social issues and you want government out of economic. God forbid, right? That's more libertarian philosophy. And so I explained to the Republicans this Nolan graph. And I'll tell you, only about a third of the room walked out on me the minute I mentioned Ron Paul. But after half an hour, 2/3 were still there. So that was, I think, a success. The point, though, is I told them, I said, look, guys, this Ron Paul movement is still getting started. And Wendell Willkie, 1940, I've mentioned, then Barry Goldwater in 1960s, right? That turned into the Ross Perot movement. That eventually turned into the Ron Paul movement. That turned into the Tea Party. Of course, now it's turned into Donald Trump, the Frankenstein monster that finally they've created. But what I told this group was this. I said, you guys need to understand that this country is going back to our roots as libertarian philosophy. I don't mean the Libertarian Party necessarily, but libertarian philosophy. Thomas Jefferson, we're in good company, meaning that this country and the young people, they want government out of the bedroom and out of their wallet, but they don't have an option and where to go. They don't know about libertarianism, so they're just becoming independents. They're ripping up their cards. So what I told this group was that whichever party, the Democrat or Republican, whichever one of you people figures this out and puts up a libertarian-leaning candidate, then you will strike the mother load of electoral votes. All right? You will get the popular vote, I should say. You will get a landslide. And Ron Paul was just scraping at that surface, about to explode. But I said, you need to understand that. And I said, look, between the two parties, I'd prefer the Republicans to figure this out before a Democrat gets a libertarian-leaning candidate, if I had to make a preference. So I warned them. Of course, they didn't listen. And Ron Paul showed up in 2012. Of course, they still were so scared that they changed the rules on Ron Paul numerous times, including the 2012 rule at the delegate convention, which we'll talk about later. But that, Ernie, and for the audience, is where now we get with Donald Trump. Is Donald Trump the pure Thomas Jefferson candidate that many of us would like to have? No. But what I'm mentioning, I know. I can't believe I even said that. But you see where I'm going, though, is where Walter Block is coming from, in my opinion. I'm not trying to speak for him, but I sense that Donald Trump, as much as I'll be struck by the libertarian gods here, he has a libertarian slant, if you think about it. I mean, some people looked at Ronald Reagan as having more of a libertarian slant. I mean, he's the one that educated Dr. Ron Paul that he was a libertarian, for God's sake. Dr. Paul admits that he learned he was a libertarian from having a conversation privately with the president, Ronald Reagan. So Ronald Reagan understood these concepts. And I think Donald Trump, whether he knows it or not, is like that. He's against the wars, in essence. He is in favor of liberal social issues. You know, he's not trying to ban gay marriage and the like. At the same time, he wants to be more of a, you know, aside from the strong borders, which is a questionable deal, but he's an economic conservative. So if you really start thinking about the positions, he follows more of a libertarian slant, at least in somewhat philosophy.
You know,
not a purist, of course.
You know, I have a comment when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hi, Arizona. I'm Ivanka Trump, and I'm very excited for March 22nd, as that is the date that the Republican primary is coming to your state. Please come out and support my father, Donald J. Trump. Go to his website, donaldjtrump.com/Arizona, to learn everything you need to know about how to vote in the primary for my father. All the information is readily available and right there, including your individual polling location. So check it out. But most importantly, on March 22nd, come out and support my father as we aim to make America great again. We appreciate it, Arizona.
Trump, Arizona. Trump. Okay, I went to this site. It's I just did it here. Trump, Arizona. I mean, it's DonaldJTrump.com/Arizona, and it has that commercial of his lovely daughter. She's going to be president. She's going to be the first woman president. I just feel this coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
the one thing I completely agree, this is a dynasty, a new dynasty, like the Kennedys, and I can't believe I'm saying that too, but this is a new American dynasty, I believe.
Yeah, no, he's got such a long-term something else planned. There's something, he's got a dead man switch on something. Whatever. All right, so let's see, election days, the rules are, you must have, you got to do, you go, and we babysat you, and this is what you got to do. All right, cool. Get involved in Arizona. Fill out the thing. You know, you can be in charge. Dun, da, da. Okay, so Trump, the election here is March 22nd, which is what, this next Tuesday?
Yes. I already knew we'd be here. Remember, I predicted this a long time ago. But
yeah,
you'd be here? Did you think we'd be sitting here talking about you going to? And by the way,
I knew Trump would make it interesting. And yeah. I tell you when it turned for me that I figured he was going to stay in. It was the first debate. Once he gets up there and they start slapping him, then he's not going to let that go away. You know, he's just never going to go. And I think you put it best when you pointed out Trump as a brand. And when I saw the, you know, months later, I mean, just a couple of months ago, I saw the Barbara Walters, you know, the interview that she had done with Trump and his wife and his family and so on. I was so impressed with the, you know, the package that he could present.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that, you know, you could see the kids were all, you know, they're crafted into, I mean, they understand the media. They understand every freaking word out of you. Better, who's going to be the first one that cracks? Who's going to be the first one that says something stupid? Who's going to be the first one? Go ahead. You know, they're going to get excommunicated from the family or something. But they did a really good job. And I tell you what it was. When you made the point about Trump being the brand and that him pulling it out, because I've seen it happen before. Perot pulled out right when he's at the peak. It's going to get, he might win, and he pulls out. Then he comes back in, you know, because there's a class action lawsuit and everything. And I'm going, yeah, that, you know, that was not good. Ron Paul, both conventions, 8 and 12, he pulls out right before, you know, you said you promised that if we kept doing, you'd go to the convention, we middle finger to the man.
Mm-hmm.
And nope, not allowed middle finger. Trump is that middle finger.
Yep.
It was denied us at the convention when Trump made it clear that, you know, it's his brand up there, and that's international. If he were to pull, it would affect him everywhere.
Yep.
So he can't. I don't see how he's in. I think he was in from the beginning.
Yep.
I think he's been planning this for a while. I think it was when Mitt Romney lost in 12. He's like, seriously, all right, move over, young Padawans. I'm going to show you how it's done. And I know he just has to have something on these guys. I don't know how not.
Well, you know, there's something also that might be, and this might sound a little simplistic, but I think he's running for president. And I've heard hints of this from people, like his family interviews that are kind of off the side, kind of off the grid, not the main, you know, Barbara Walters type thing. But is that I think Trump is just bored. Trump.
Yeah.
Trump.
Tomorrow the world.
Trump is just that damn good at every. Matter of fact, his father said something that Trump actually, it's in the Art of the Deal. I think it was in the Art of the Deal. His father was quoted of saying, "I don't understand this kid of mine. No matter what is thrown at him, he turns everything into gold." It's like Rumpelstiltskin. And I forget the actual phrase that he used. But his own father.
Midas.
The Midas touch. That his father was noticing this kid who was not very couth, who was, you know, brash and but street smart. And, of course, you know, his father was a millionaire. And he worked with, you know, salespeople and real estate brokers and the elite in New York of his day. But he never saw anything like his son. Like, his son just seemed to, like the Teflon Don. I mean, no matter what happened, he would just make money. And we could, that's another analysis about how he does it. Is it charisma? Is it just luck? Is it just he's so brilliant, which he is? I mean, there's a combination of these things. But Trump, if you think about it, especially if you've read his book, I keep telling you people, you have to read Art of the Deal, whether you like Trump or not. You need to understand him. Remember, I told Republicans, you need to learn about Ron Paul to understand what this movement is. You need to understand Donald Trump. But I think with Trump, he had done so many things at such an early age. I mean, he wound up, you know, by the time he was 30, he was writing his first books. He was already buying up, you know, all of Manhattan. He built the Taj Mahal, which is at the time the largest casino in the world outside of, I think, Vegas. It was huge. It was there in Atlantic City. I watched it being built, for God's sake. I talked about it on the show, the Trump Taj Mahal. And, you know, when I was a young kid, you know, Trump was just an old guy. But I realized now he was 35. The guy was 35 and he put together the giant Trump Taj Mahal. He also was writing books. He was on the Howard Stern show. He did, you know, which I know, but he did everything
for
media.
Able to do it.
He did it. He did.
Who else of the presidential candidates could even do Howard Stern?
Exactly. He did 60 Minutes. He would do international economic talks. He would be on Howard Stern. He was in the wrestling rink. McMahon from the WWF.
Yeah,
he did a wrestling match, for God's sake.
No, I saw a stills of him with his hair flopping all over in his suit on the mat.
Yeah.
So you actually saw the...
Yeah. It was called the Battle of the Billionaires. Vince McMahon and Donald Trump. I mean, we got to play at some point. We'll play it later. But the thing is...
I don't know why we haven't done that.
There's so much. The thing is, he's, you know, Howard Stern, I hate to bring up Howard Stern on the show, but he talks about the self-proclaimed king of all media, all right? Why? Because he conquered radio. Howard Stern conquered the movies. I mean, his movie was like number one at the box office, Private Parts. He had number one book, Private Parts, the book, and not to mention other books. He had videos that went right to the top. But Bongo Fiesta, I have to admit, I actually have a copy. That's another story. We'll have a Howard Stern watch party. But anyway, the thing is, Howard Stern did all of that, including he did his reality show. What is it? The America's Got Talent or something. So, I mean, he's done quite a bit more than most people ever have. That's Howard Stern. Well, Donald Trump has done, you know, all of that in a different way. And he's basically the king of the mountain in everything. He's taken over New York. He's taking over the world as far as luxury properties. He has properties anywhere in the world that anyone really wants to go, at least from his perspective. He's bought politicians. He basically can do whatever he wants. He's I don't say that in an anarchist, dictator sense, although there's some certain overtones that we're concerned about. But that's what Donald Trump has done. And I think he's done everything, and he's sitting back watching that the one thing that was always in his way to get to where he's at, which he has succeeded, has been government. And I think Donald Trump's view is like Peter Schiff has said. Again, I can't believe I'm mentioning those two in a sentence.
Yeah, we're playing the wrestling in the background while you're talking.
And so the thing is with Trump is he talks about, or I'm sorry, with Peter Schiff, is that businessmen, when they do well, and what Obama and liberals don't understand, is that businessmen do well certain businesses that are still making money, they do well in spite of government, not because of all these government regulations, but in spite of it, which shows you how tenacious these companies are. And people don't realize how much upstream, upwind these companies have to fight to get to where they're at. They don't get it. Donald Trump does. Donald Trump has been this successful even in light of all of these regulations and problems. And of course, how has he done it? Well, he's played both sides. He's given money to both sides and he understands the system. So the fact that he's done everything and he's kind of circled the drain in a way, he's been all around the map.
When you're
the only thing left is the president.
I know, when you're doing this, and what the deal was, there was some...
We got to play that.
Guys,
let's play it live.
Well, let's play it. You know, they...
Well, with the audio. Let's do the audio. Oh, there she's cutting off his hair.
This is... it was, you know, depending on who won the match or where they cut off their hair or something.
Yeah.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And so, obviously throughout this campaign, Donald Trump has been underestimated by almost everybody, right? I mean, we've seen that repeatedly. Everybody who's supposed to know what they're talking about said he didn't have any chance, blah, blah, blah. Now here we are. There are 17 candidates, 18, Gilmore. And with all due respect, you were there. And now it's down to really effectively.
I'm gonna say, Megan, the reason that I'm, sitting in this chair tonight talking to you instead of on the stage is because, like everybody else, I underestimated Donald Trump and the connection he was having to voters. No doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the risk that the Democrats run in taking him on, because he's unlike anything they've ever seen or dealt with before. Even the Clintons, with the Clinton playbook, they don't know what to do with him.
No, they really don't. And they're conventional politicians, but they're also extraordinarily rugged. They're ruthless. I've run against their machine every race I ever had to fight in Arkansas, so I know it well. And so in some ways, I've run against their machine, and I've run against Donald Trump. And I can tell you, Hillary is in for the ride of her life when she has to take on Donald Trump. It'll be unlike anything she or her husband have ever faced before.
So,
and I really think that it is, game advantage for Trump.
Yep. So that's, there we go. That was Mike Huckabee talking with Megyn Kelly last night. Fox News has been astounding.
That was just last night?
That was just last night.
Oh,
well, two nights ago, yeah. That was just Mike Huckabee talking about after Super Tuesday 2, as they say, Super Tuesday 2, which now it keeps going. But they're having a reckoning on Fox more than usual, where, and I have a number of clips we'll play, maybe it's scattered through the show, of the establishment now. But the last number of weeks, it was sort of the silent majority people on Fox, the Sean Hannity's, people that were coming out for Fox. But now Trump, after these last votes, these number of states, is he starting to break through that ceiling? They keep saying the ceiling's 20%, 30%, 40%. Well,
50%.
Now he's at 50%. He's cracked that.
Can't be Hillary, though.
Yeah, right.
That's what
right.
they said.
Yeah. I said
they've
on this
been,
show.
They've been right so far.
Yeah, exactly. I've said on this show, his only obstacle is how much exposure he and the media will give Trump when they try to screw him over in Ohio for the convention. Because if he gets through that, it's what we've been debating. I'm telling you, if he gets that nomination, he will win. I've said this from, you know, 6 months ago. He will win the general in a landslide. He will slam it. It'll be
so
over.
So uneven, double standard. I mean, when you have a media that is embracing and highlighting the reporters and the activists and everything that are threatening death, assassination, that's how we're going to solve this problem. I remember, you know, in movies and reading about it and study of JFK. It was the same kind of rhetoric was going on around. Matter of fact, it was Chicago. I think JFK, there was an aborted. Some guy made a big deal out of it. Somebody was telling me, and he goes, "Oh, they're gonna." It was a Secret Service guy. He's like, "They're gonna kill him in Chicago." He goes, "Yeah, yeah." So he didn't go, and then he did it a couple weeks later in Dallas or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, "This is the they build up this." Fervor of course, everybody hates him. See, we just showed you pictures of everybody hating him, and they really hate him, so he like died because they hated him. And, you know,
right.
Book closed.
Which, and we're probably jumping ahead, but this plays into the politics, which is a whole other area about how he's going to secure that nomination, how he's going to get those other delegates. Hear me out for a second, because I think ultimately he's going to go with Cruz. I think Cruz has to be his VP. If the Republicans play hardball at that establishment, the only way is to get Cruz to give his delegates to him, because they have like 82% of all of them. You can't even touch them with a Mr. Magoo Kasich, okay? It's not even possible. Those two have to unify and come together. I think Cruz ultimately will, because there's no way for him to get there.
There's been Cruz, olive branches already.
Oh, he's been doing it. Trump has been doing all of laying them out every time, after every state vote.
I like Cruz.
So he's putting that out there.
He's all right.
And Cruz, yeah, exactly. So Cruz, I think, realizes he's trying to see. Cruz is trying to play it straight. He's saying, I don't believe in a contested convention. I don't believe in this brokered convention. We have to do it straight. Whoever wins it should do it properly. Now, the reason he's saying that
properly is what the hell?
Exactly.
Does that
what
mean?
Does that mean? But the reason he's saying that is he's saying, don't deny Trump the I'm just saying, he's saying, don't deny whoever is the front runner with the nomination.
Legitimate.
He's saying that. Of course, the reason he's saying that is because the establishment won't back him. If the establishment would back him, he'd be all in favor of the party rules, but he knows that if he doesn't beat Trump straight up with the delegates, then he cannot pull a Kasich and or a Rubio and come in from the rear
because they're not going to support him.
They'll go over him, hopscotch him, and go right to Rubio, or first be Jeb, then Rubio, and now it's going to be Kasich, which they can't believe it's Kasich. But that's what they're so Cruz knows that he's kind of sandwiched. You know, Trump has the front runner and Kasich has the caboose, and he's sort of in the middle and has no way out. So Cruz, though, is an opportunist. I don't trust him at all. Trusted, right? Yeah, hell yeah, hell no. So Cruz is, in my opinion, maybe a step away from antisocial disorder, and that's another discussion. But he changes anything for what is popular.
Mike's got a disorder for everybody.
Yeah, no. It's not for everybody. It's very few people I mentioned.
What's my disorder? Now you got one.
No, ask. Hey, Donna, we need you in here for this one. But that's where Cruz is. He's kind of, you know, in a pickle, as they say. So I think the only way out is going to be to team up with Trump, because at least that way he can be VP.
Wait, think
about it. He has Texas. Right. And Trump has Florida. So they already have the two big ones locked up aside from California. And Cruz can be VP. That way they solidify the anti-establishment, put the last nail in the coffin of the establishment.
Wins California.
And Cruz now is young. He's only 45, whatever, that he can run again at some point. At least there's an opportunity
to be
president.
And he's going to change his demeanor because
I know. That's this whole slimy sales guy for the, you know, for the religious movement. I mean, it really turns people off. He doesn't even see it. But that's the only game plan for Cruz, because otherwise Cruz, like Rubio, has nothing to do when this campaign's over. They threw all their eggs in one cart.
So Rubio's not running for Senate anymore?
No. Well, Rubio's completely dead now. That's the kicker. He burnt all of his bridges in Florida, right? The Charlie Crist race. Then he did everything again. He basically backstabbed Jeb Bush and the establishment in Florida. And then he gave up a Senate seat, which he wasn't using much anyway. He wasn't going there to vote. Yeah. And so now, when he lost his own state, he gambled. People said he should have pulled out before the Florida vote.
So he's going for a talking head circuit on Fox?
Wait, could be VP, but here's the problem. Here's the problem. If he stays in Florida before he lost Florida, he could have run for governor. That's where people thought he'd be. But at this point, he got destroyed in his home state, for God's sake. He almost came in almost in third place to Cruz, for God's sake. He lost his state embarrassingly, not to mention he lost his credibility by the small hands and all that crap that he did earlier. So he really just crashed and burned. And unlike Trump, who would, if he lost, would still stay a billionaire, and Jeb Bush is still Jeb Bush, and everyone still has their positions, Rubio has nothing to fall back on. So he's sitting there with these delegates. What do you do? Well, if it's contested, Rubio could be a person that did throw up. We'll talk later. It's not going to happen because this is exposed, and the establishment cannot ram this one down the people's throat. So what might they try to do is say the establishment will go with you if you make Rubio the VP. So that's one way that if Trump was going to do the olive branch, he'd say, okay, let's unify this party. I will put Rubio as the VP. It's a smart decision in many ways, except for one, is that he's establishment. And if there's a target on your head, then Trump knows that all they have to do is that the establishment is salivating death warrant to put the establishment back in.
I wouldn't trust
him.
There's
no way he'll do that.
They would go, then we win either way, Hillary or we'll get Rubio. You know, I don't trust him. And every time Trump gets an opportunity in the last lately, he's always throws in one kind. Yeah, you know, Trump, Cruz is okay. Yeah, I like Cruz. Yeah, Cruz. Because I can see if he needs him, you know, he needs the delegates. They just come in as a team and it's over.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll change the rules. Because my man Jeb is just sitting over there waiting for his opportunity to pound.
Oh, wow. He's just,
you know what? All you got to do is just count on their freaking ewness. And then we have a Showtime
Jeb
clip.
Yep.
In the next hour, we're going to do that, you know, just really closely parallels, you know, what Dr. Frank's been saying. And I'm telling you, we have a story up there about Trump and Trump is Hitler, fiction or fact, on Lou Rockwell. We got it up there, you know, comparing the history of Hitler before he became, you know, Lord God King. Hell, he wrote Mein Kampf from jail. So, I mean, you know, the guy had issues, and they're trying to say that's not. But how the reality of Trump's America outpaced Netflix House of Cards. Oh, my God.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Thursday, March 17th, 2016. Silver is trading at $15.68 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,265 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $423. Antiwar.com reports officials with the Syrian Kurdish forces say they intend to declare a democratic federal system immediately in the territory they control across northern Syria, formalizing their de facto autonomy over a broad swath of the Syrian side of the border with Turkey. The official announcement is scheduled for Thursday. The PYD, the primary political force in the region, and political wing of the YPG, the Kurdish militia in the region, says the decision was taken after consultation with regional minorities and say autonomy is the best way to protect Syria's territorial integrity in the future. That likely won't sit well with the major rebel factions in the ongoing Syrian civil war, which have angrily rejected the notion of federalism in recent comments, envisioning a powerful, heavily centralized state with themselves at the helm after the war. Turkey, which attacks YPG forces intermittently, is also furious at the announcement, with their foreign ministry insisting they would never recognize Kurdish autonomy in the region. And even though the plan appears modeled on what the U.S. imposed in Iraqi Kurdistan during the 2003 occupation. The Obama administration has also expressed opposition, saying they oppose any autonomy for Syria's Kurds.
In 1999, Darrell W. Perry began a search for traditional values, which led him down a path to the ideas of liberty. He tells the story in A Rebel's Journey, My Path to Liberty. Of the book, Dr. Brian Sovereign says, "Sometimes it's funny, and sometimes I think it's crazy, but it's always authentic." Find A Rebel's Journey, My Path to Liberty by Darrell W. Perry on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, ask for A Rebel's Journey wherever books are sold, or visit arebelsjourney.com. UPI reports the U.S. Federal Reserve decided Wednesday to hold key interest rates steady, citing a volatile domestic stock market and an uncertain global economic climate, but said further hikes are expected before 2016 is over. The Federal Open Market Committee decided to leave the American Central Bank's benchmark interest rate in a range between 0.25% and 0.5% at the conclusion of its two-day March meeting on Wednesday. An updated outlook for 2016 includes two small interest rate hikes, down from a forecast of 4 at the Fed's December meeting when the central bank raised rates for the first time in 9 years. A committee report a month later did not include an economic assessment, but Wednesday's did, and said the domestic climate is growing at a moderate pace. Inflation, a key economic gauge and factor in the Federal Reserve's interest rate evaluation, remains below where analysts thought it would be. Yellen said the central bank expects inflation to return to the 2% threshold along with further economic growth and labor strides within the next 2 to 3 years.
For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co.
Reuters reports the Uber driver in Michigan charged with murdering 6 people last month in a shooting spree has filed a $10 million federal civil rights lawsuit against the ride-sharing company, saying that it is Uber's fault he is in prison. Jason Dalton, 45, filed the 2-page handwritten lawsuit against Uber in U.S. District Court on Tuesday, saying the company has ruined his life and never invited him to any corporate parties. Dalton wrote, "Uber does not care about its drivers. We are peasants and pawn pieces to Uber's bottom line," adding that the company discriminated against him because of his mental health, saying, "I'm currently in prison because of Uber." Dalton wrote that he is seeking a jury trial and would represent himself in court. Uber responded with a statement saying, "It's hard to know how to respond to someone who refuses to take responsibility for his own actions." Dalton told police that when he would press a button on his phone screen, the horned cow head of the devil would appear and give him an assignment that he said would literally take over his body. He faces 16 charges, including 6 of murder, that can bring life in prison. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here.
Afraid. We're just relatively concerned, okay? We're concerned. You know, there's a lot of concern going on. We have a lot of good stuff for you today. We're going to get you some clips and everything, but I got to tell you, you know, what's coming up this week. We have, where's my glasses. We have Erica Harris. She's moved to Acapulco. We said, you know, give it a few weeks and we want to talk to you. So she'll be on tomorrow. Then we have Scott Horton, anti-war. That's always important. If I, you know, one less thing I got to do. Have Scott Horton on every Friday and, you know, and then we're good. And it winds up coming, you know, it's kind of a mini Trump report. But, you know, it's we get to talk about a lot of stuff. Barry Cooper, you know, the narco cop that went anti-narco cop, and met him in Acapulco. And he, just a great find. And it's going to be a really great show tomorrow. Make sure you tune in for that, because he's... I got a great story, and we had him scheduled before, but he had a scheduling thing. So tomorrow, Barry Cooper. Then we're going to do a podcast because the time, you know, when the show's on, he's not available. We're going to do Chuck Baldwin. Chuck Baldwin's got something to say. So he's going to have something to say. So tomorrow afternoon, we'll have that podcast up. Next week, Tuesday, Dave Hodges. You know, it's always something, and we're all going to die from something. And, you know, Dave Hodges has definitely got his inside contact, tell him stuff, and it's the New World Order is going to come get us some way. And Dave's always a good speaker. He was a speaker at the Breakfast Club this last month, and that was really entertaining. We have been informative. Wednesday is James Corbett. Now, he's finally, you know, he had to move. We had a problem with him a couple weeks ago because he's moving. So we're going to have him on next Wednesday. He can tell us all about the move. Then after him, Sabelle Edmonds. Sabelle Edmonds, boyandfrog.com, I think what it is. But she has a new site thing that she's launching, and she wants to talk about that. And Sabelle Edmonds was the FBI translator that they did you know, treason if you talk. I mean, it was, you know, she was a whistleblower from inside and 9/11 kind of stuff. So that'll be interesting. And then, of course, the Trump report next Thursday again. You think we'll have something to talk about then, too?
Well, unless, you know, Trump drops out, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a Kasich wins and this whole thing will be over.
Yeah. I gotta say, man, this House of Cards, you know, with Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright, and what you if you guys aren't following that, you really should, because it all builds up the entire series of seasons. It's in the third season or whatever. It is now. You know, the whole thing was a building up about the run for president in 2016. That's what this whole series was building up to.
Yeah.
And they're covering it, and they're, oh, it's NSA, and it's Google searching, and it's a how can we use and the data of to do and kind of.
Yeah, but the kicker is, who needs fiction when you just turn on real
which
life?
Is my point.
I mean, this is the issue.
How the reality of Trump's America outpaced Netflix House of Cards.
Yeah, outpaced.
Yeah, with Plaid.
Oh, they're talking about the ratings going through the roof. You know, I want to talk about in a moment how significant this, you know, the other day was. You know, we just had Super Tuesday, I guess part two. And what the funny thing is, we don't have a name for it because there was never Super Tuesday part two. By Super Tuesday, we already knew who the nominee was. Matter of fact, later on, I'm going to play a couple clips that lead into the main clip about the circus, which is all about the establishment. This week has been about the establishment coming to terms with what's going on. So, there's about kind of back to back a bunch of, you know, like minute clips that I found fascinating, hearing the establishment figures that I've seen on Fox for months now say, oh, this is never going to happen. Oh, well, this is going to happen. And oh, yeah, right. You know, even Jeb Bush, Trump will never be the nominee. What do you know, Jeb? Well, you know, it's funny how it's all coming to a point where the establishment publicly is now turning and accepting to some degree. So you're seeing that metamorphosis. But what happened on Super Tuesday 2 was basically the number of delegates was about to hit over the 50% mark of what you need to win. So in essence, there were four states that were in play, I believe, plus I think it was one of the islands somewhere in the east. But anyway, all of this went, and Trump won all of them except for Ohio, and that was his loss. Now, the kicker...
What was his percentage in Ohio?
He was like 12 points down from Kasich, which was a bit surprising. But for the people who don't know, the reason this was so significant is that he could have clinched the nomination by solidifying the 1,237 delegates before the nomination process in Ohio when they have the RNC convention. So he's trying to get that magic number. We'll talk about later if he misses it by a few points, but technically, what the establishment is counting on is if he misses it by 1,236,
but then they'd have to turn off convention
him.
Lights or something.
Yeah, yeah.
They have to, like, you know, have a an outage of something, whatever, a black swan event of a mushroom something.
Yeah, well, they're counting. Yeah, exactly. They're counting. They're counting on the aliens to come invade 1,236. Then they're expecting
Jeb.
Yeah. So they're expecting this to happen and the people not to understand the process and then do the last minute rule change, which is what they did to Ron Paul a number of years ago. So they are expecting these rules changes. And of course, the American people not really understanding or caring as there's wall to wall coverage this time. That's what they're expecting to happen. But so therefore, if though Trump was going to win this, quote unquote, legitimately, and that word I use with big air quotes, he would need to solidify enough delegates. The only way to do it, or the way that they were expecting, is that if Trump continues what he's doing, which is winning about 40% of the popular vote, therefore, certain states that are winner take all, they put in Trump's corner. And then the other states that are proportional, if Trump still continues at 40%, they're saying, okay, here's the number of delegates he'll get. By following that map, they realized that he would be under the amount if he lost both Florida and Ohio. If he solidified and won both Florida and Ohio, then he would be essentially continuing that same 40%.
At 60%.
He would win, right? He would win. However, the question is, if he won Florida and lost Ohio, where does he land? And that's what happened. He lost Ohio, and he lost a pretty big margin. People didn't expect.
Was it a winner-take-all state?
Yeah, it was a winner-take-all.
Okay, so
that's why. Now, historically, the Buckeye state, Ohio, every Republican, and I think Democrat, but I think maybe it's Democrat too, but I know Republican, is that every president who's ever run in modern times has always won Ohio. So they're saying with wherever Ohio votes goes the rest of the nation, as they say. And so that's why John Kasich, Mr. Magoo, believes because he won the one state, his home state, Ohio.
You know,
Mr. Magoo, with all the confetti coming down, you know, Mr. Magoo, he sat there. He won the one state. He thought he just won the presidency the way he had his celebratory, you know, conference.
Well, I remember
he thinks
this
he's gonna win.
During the Bush year 04 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And we were covering a lot of it, you know, based on, you know, election fraud back then. You know, that was my, you know, big thing. I'm going, look, this is all decided. I've been through this with how the computers are, who's doing blah, 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 blah. The guys that you have, Diebold and election service, I don't even keep track anymore. I don't care. They had two competing, ESS, you know, electronic, some whoever cares. They merged. They were run by two brothers. You know, a lot of people just don't know this. They don't care. And it'd be reported, whatever, you're still voting. So they guaranteed an Ohio win. I mean, I guarantee. They come in, Republican, we guarantee, wink, wink, guarantee. Don't worry about how we got guaranteed, wink, wink. So I'm just going, that system, like, I'm sure that just went away and they don't do that no more.
I'm sure.
That'd be bad.
They've cleaned up their act. Yeah. It's only on House of Cards. Well, here's the kicker. Now that coming back for the break here, we're coming up to it. Here's the clincher is that the people who predicted this on Fox, this one group, they have the whiteboard, they call it. They've predicted the delegates almost 100%. It's been astounding. When they include now Ohio that he lost and they look at the rest of the states, the predicted delegates is exactly 1,237. They said they can't believe.
It's always 49.51 on everything.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
On the point about Trump heading toward this nomination with what I think is a big lead, you asked earlier whether the Republican Party could be fractured by a Trump nomination. I think what could fracture the Republican Party is an attempt by the Remembrance establishment to deny Trump the nomination if he is anything close to the magic 1237, because that will leave
That's just the other side of the same coin.
Yes. It's,
you know, how ticked off are each side of the Republican Party, those who back Trump and those who do not? And we'll just leave you to ponder that as we go to break.
I'm sorry.
There we go. So first of all, there is the coloring book. In a second, this is Ernie Hancock's work of art. Very good. I might add. I've seen a couple pieces of Trump artwork here from the famous Ernie Hancock, and I think they're kind of, I don't know, they're kind of up there with Picasso, with Dolly. Yeah.
It's a coloring book. Trump coloring book. That's a bunch of, you know, guys are starting to fill this out. Anybody that's over here, you know, they do it. Oh, here's my other one. I aim to misbehave. This is a Serenity thing. There you go. Okay, and then Barry did one. It was him playing chess with Putin.
That was Barry.
You know,
Barry, good job, by the way.
You know, there's
Trump and Putin playing chess.
This is awesome. You know, so
this is going around the whole liberty movement, doing some Trump here.
I meant to bring it to the thing last night, see if we can get Judge Buttrick doing.
I know,
something.
Yeah, but he's the intellectual elites of this thing of coloring and
you
Trump.
Know, it was but, Trump was a conversation. I had a lot of people coming. You know, Mark Nessman is a big world traveler, get passport kind of move, expatriate guy. Mm-hmm. And Mark Nessman came out, and he was all excited. He's like, you know, man, you got to tell me. And he's kind of had a frown. You know, what's your perspective on this Trump thing? And I'm going, 30-something shows, 50-something hours, 20 hours bonus, Trump report since July. I'm trumped up, man. And I go, I tell you what the deal is. I go, it's just a middle finger. All the crap, corruption crap. And people just going, wow, you really don't like Trump? I like him more now. You know, and I don't think it's any more complicated than that.
Nope. Like I was saying last hour was, if you look at the Nolan graph, I think Trump is tapping into that libertarian feeling, that philosophy. And I don't mean that in the purest.
He can't have ignored it. I mean,
that's exactly what he is. I don't even know if Trump understands that, but that is, I think, the roots, the silent majority, in our DNA is that libertarian philosophy. It's been lost to the wind ever since the Civil War.
Made fun of.
And everything was split to liberal conservative. Now it's made fun of a bunch of anarchy.
Made fear of.
You know, the anarchy marijuana smokers. That's kind of what it's turned into. But that's our roots. I've always said, you know, I'm a libertarian. Thomas Jefferson was a libertarian. I'm in damn good company the way I see it. So that's what I stick it to these neocons. Now, I think, though,
they'll go Democrat now. Hillary. Bill Kristol, Hillary. I go, like, they were saying this. Phyllis Schlafly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Her son was there last night.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The attorney Jane Orient, you know, the American Associate of Physicians and Surgeons is what I don't know what group she was advocating then, but she had brought him as a guest. Well, his mother is 90 something years old, so he definitely had, you know, something to say about the Trump thing. And I kind of got the impression he was out of his depth. This is some, you know, brilliant minds that are there. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, somebody comes in and they're going to, you know, tell us how it is because they're Schlafly's son. It just doesn't, you know, go over as well. And I was considering having him on the show, and I just go, nah, it'd probably be uncomfortable. You know, because he just presupposes some, you know, he's a Constitution this and God, and we're all going to whatever. And I'm just going, yeah, I Phyllis is in the 90s, and she's very influential. But I think she came out in support of Trump, too.
Well, that's what's happening. I mean, just today, yesterday, Jan Brewer, the ex-governor of Arizona, who co-opted the illegal immigration bill here. Matter of fact, she was in favor of amnesty with John McCain originally, but then when was SB 1070, which is the anti-immigration bill that kind of shocked the nation, where a number of years ago in Arizona, where Arizona decided if the federal government was not going to defend our walls and our border, then we'll do it ourselves by simply mirroring the Constitution. The Constitution says that it'll basically defend our borders. So we just copied and pasted into our Constitution, essentially, into our law. And the government, of course, went to the Supreme Court and said that we're not allowed on our own to do what the Constitution says the government should be doing if the government doesn't do it. So anyway, Jan Brewer, who was against that at first, then turned around when her election year came up, and she embraced it along with John McCain, who was against it, then was for it, election year. And he had the infamous commercial we should play when he sat down on the border and said to the border patrolman, officer, when are we going to build the dang fence? Build the dang fence. Which, of course, then after he won, it went to the vapor, to the ether again. So what I think, so Jan Brewer endorsing him, even though she's now left office. We have now Governor Ducey, who refuses to endorse Donald Trump and has snubbed him when he's been here. I think Jan Brewer, it says a lot. It shows the establishment, again, that is starting to turn around for Donald Trump. Now, in this case, it's establishment that's out of office, but it's still a profound change because she doesn't have to vote for him. She doesn't have to endorse him politically. She's out of the circle now, and yet she did so. So I think that's going to take, I think it's going to get some momentum. Going back with the libertarians.
Well, here, real quick, I want to point this out. Donna, go ahead and put this Schaafly thing up. Conservative icon Phyllis Schaafly endorses Donald Trump. That's just a couple days ago. And they're making mention of this. And, I, you know, it's anyone that has been doing the elite rule the world and build the burger empire of industrial military shake secret handshake people, you know, they're going, you know, Trump. And I'm going, God, a billionaire? Yeah, he's probably been privy to all the private conversations while they're trying to impress Trump, because you know they were. There's some lobbyists saying, oh, yeah, we're you know, people like us and rule the masses and whatever. He knows. And I think they know he knows. He's been so inside gathering all this information and has a ledger, a log, an email, kind of the book of the chronology of the calendar or something. And there, that's what
hey,
I
told you, reminds me of my Italian family. And remember, the whole rule is basically you do a favor and hey, you know, you don't basically, if you owe a favor to certain people, he's going to collect later, right? And so Donald Trump has done many favors, and those favors come personal, in personal appearances, in endorsements, and it comes in the form of many U.S. Federal Reserve notes. And so he's done many of these through the years. So talk about a ledger of favors that are owed. And I think that's what this is about as well. This includes Hollywood, most of Hollywood.
Yeah, Brent Brewer, where did that come from? I mean, one, like anybody cares.
Well, one, Trump's coming to Arizona. So if and nothing else, you want to get some free publicity and go on the gravy train.
Well, Brewer's never that popular to begin with. And she's not. She just does what she's told. Trust me.
The thing is, you have ideologues who really are conservative. People at National Review. And as much as I might disagree with their stance on this case, I give them credit. I think people like National Review at least are principled and they believe what they're saying. Like Bernie Sanders. I respect Bernie Sanders. I would never in a million years vote for him, but I respect the man because he believes what he does. Hillary Clinton, antisocial disorder, doesn't believe a damn thing that comes out of her mouth. It's all about power. So to me, it's intention.
House cards.
And I think you're seeing the people who don't have principles, like Jan Brewer and others, who are always going with the wind, whoever is the winner. Well, they're starting to sense, they're jumping ship like rats, and they're going on the Trump gravy train. That's
you
what's
know,
happening.
Who was the first to go? You think that was the big one?
Would the big one's Chris Christie.
Christie?
Yeah.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Look, Megan, Trump had a very good night tonight. He's had a lot of good nights. And if this were anyone else who had won this many contests this far into the process, there would be no question about that candidate inevitably being the nominee and the party rallying around him or her. But Trump is uniquely polarizing as a front runner in any major party we've seen in recent history. Exit polls show 30% or more of Republicans in some of these states tonight say they'd consider voting for a third party candidate.
Do you believe that? Would you consider that?
We'd think about it. It'd be a very difficult decision. But look, we've heard, Megan, over and over again, Trump's going to be unifying. He's going to be presidential. We heard this a couple weeks ago. And what did we see? We see his campaign manager manhandling a female reporter and then lying about it afterwards. We see Donald Trump saying he might consider paying the legal fees of a goon who sucker punched a protester at one of his rallies. Mm-hmm. So that's why Trump is winning all these contests but is not able to put it away, and he's not going to put it away, and we're not going to stand down until he actually gets that 1237, and he's not there yet.
Okay, we got another one.
Trump had an immunity bubble and has it today as being an entertainer. And this is a first for a Republican Party. In order to be able to say whatever you want and not have people come after you, that is a new thing. And I think that's what is refreshing and what is changing the Republican Party, making people aren't used to this sort of thing. You know, the Republican Party is always being used to being attacked for being sexist or being, you know, mean. And basically what Trump is saying is, I don't care. And it seems to be working. In fact, it's working now more than ever.
So basically, those were two clips, and I can't play all these all day, but those people you heard are the establishment wing of Fox News. And what people don't realize, if you're not watching Fox, is, I've said this for months now, is that Fox News is now split. They are not unified against the people as they were during the Ron Paul campaign, which is why so many of us said, screw Fox, and I don't blame you. But inside Fox, they now are going through the Tea Party. The Ron Paul movement has infested them. The virus of liberty and freedom has gotten to them. And they don't know it. They're having a hard time articulating it. But you're seeing it through this division of Trump. And so first, it was, they're all in shock and awe, right? I mean, even though on this show, we're predicting what was going to happen. But anyway, yeah, they were shock and awe. Then slowly, the first people began to crack, and that was Sean Hannity, strangely enough, and Bill O'Reilly and others that began to defend Trump because they were part of the populist movement, because they were seeing it and hearing it on their radio shows constantly. Same thing with Rush Limbaugh. They're the ones that gave it some credibility. The next step was that the lesser hosts, some of them that were populist, began becoming brave enough to publicly show their support for Trump, or at least his candidacy, on different Fox shows like Fox and Friends. Then Justice Jeanine, who played that viral video we played last time, she came out because she's friends with Trump, but she didn't know how to, you know, she was hiding it. And she says, you know what? I'm all Trump. Then Geraldo Rivera, who's like a liberal background. Well, he won Celebrity Apprentice. He's, of course, Hispanic. He was put in the crosshairs because he's personal friends with Trump. And anyway, so this whole thing is been showing this divide. But the establishment wing is still there. And the reason is that many of the commentators on Fox are ex-speechwriters for the Bush campaign. And so that's why many of the people, if you're writing speeches for the Bushes, you tend to be part of the establishment. And they're the people on Fox. So the people you just heard are establishment trying to explain the Trump phenomena. And that's what's fascinating. That last clip, you know, the guy's talking about the Trump bubble and that he can get away with things and that, well, you know, it's refreshing the fact that he says things and we're used to calling racist and we can't say. And you know what? I think, as establishment, I'm starting to figure out Trump. You know, some reason, things are different now. People are allowed to say what they want and they're getting away with it. I don't understand, but somehow that must be why Trump was so brilliant and he figured that out. No, Mr. Establishment, the reason is that people have been suppressed all this time and he's literally saying what everyone has been trying to tell the establishment. They have not listened. Anyway, I have one last clip, and Ernie's going to play this. This is a quick setup, and this might go right to break. It's about 3 minutes. This is a trailer that's going viral for a show that is on Showtime called The Circus. This show, I'm telling you, if you have Showtime, you better be watching this. It is a guy that decided to do a documentary about the political process here in America. So remember, this is before Trump, before anyone knew. They just thought it'd be Jeb versus Clinton. I mean, it'll be a boring race. But this guy decided to embed his people with every campaign and film it, no holds barred, with each of these candidates and the establishments, and just watch what happens. And each week, he edits the show, and he puts this out timely.
Who's this guy that does this?
I forget. I mean, they mention him on here. But this show, of course, was under the radar because no one was thinking this campaign was much of a big deal. Now the campaign is beating all the ratings and everything, including House of Cards, that was supposed to capitalize off of this. But this show, The Circus, is capturing history now as we're seeing this country divide and truly metamorphosize in front of us. This show is capturing it. Well, this is a 3-minute trailer, and it literally shows the establishment. Every time you think about the establishment as a bunch of old guys in a smoked up dark room in some restaurant or a 5-star restaurant.
They found
this. This is it. This is every stereotype, and we're gonna play it right now and hear them talk, still flabbergasted, trying to explain Trump.
Everybody around this table that I know, we've been in every presidential campaign probably since 1980 in various degrees.
This is real.
Trump's problem, he doesn't have a compass. You don't know what his compass is.
And how problematic
Rick Cole,
is that for the future?
Major GOP fundraiser.
I think before it's all over, it's going to be hugely problematic.
I talk to people all the time, as I'm sure everybody around the table does, and they say, why don't you Republicans do something about this guy?
Ben Weber, former congressman.
I'm sorry, this is not the Soviet Union. We can't call a meeting and decide Trump is out.
And we hate that. Yeah. Benign dictatorship, who's for it? Trump is doing well for one reason. He understands the climate and the culture of America today better than anybody at this table.
Ron Hoffman, White House advisor, Bush 41.
Maybe someone that none of you know.
Shell-shocked. Bewildered. Republicans are hierarchical, respectful of authority. We fall in line, and Trump has interrupted that cycle.
Donald Trump, nobody thought of him as any kind of political leader until 6 months ago.
He's not articulate, he's not poised, he's not informed. All he has going for him is a lot of votes. Why hasn't any of that hit home? Here we are. Here we are.
Ed Rogers, White House advisor, Reagan, Bush, 41.
I think everyone's kind of buying into this, he's inevitable and that he can't be stopped. I believe he can be stopped.
What are you doing or plan to do to stop him?
He's working on chaos.
Exactly.
What are you doing?
We're working on it.
Ed goes pollster, anti-Trump super PAC, McCain campaign.
None of us know who you're talking about.
Our principal.
Katie Packer. What's your role in that PAC?
Polling. Which is now public record.
What did he say?
Which concerns you more? Oh. That he'd lose the general if he were the nominee, or how he'd do as president?
Losing the election.
Mike Duncan, former GOP national chairman. When they say Bush 41, they mean Daddy Bush.
So what you're saying is vote for the least of two evils.
Do you know for sure Trump would be a better president than Hillary Clinton?
No, but it's a risk that I'm willing to take. If we get off into splitting our party, we can't put it back together. Humpty Dumpty won't come back together.
That's the great dividing line in that question right there.
Because you care more about it being president.
I'm scared of him as president. I think he's an authoritarian figure. To deport 12 million people, build a wall on the Mexican border, and impose a religious test on people coming into this country is so violative of everything I believe about America and the Republican Party.
I travel around the world a lot, and Trump is a laughingstock. The world, whatever that is at peace with Hillary Clinton.
The next president's going to decide the direction of the Supreme Court for 4 years, at minimum. Do you really want to give it to her? Mrs. Warren will be beating the crap out of here to make sure it's some lefty pinko. So you know that's a fact.
Lefty pinko? This
may be a question.
I mean, what does that mean?
But you're right. In the end, that's the question.
I've never voted for a Democrat, I've never voted for anybody other than a Republican president of the United States. This would not be an easy thing for me.
Wow.
More martini?
Wow.
There we go, the establishment.
I'll be right back.
This is your Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. Following the Fed announcement keeping interest rates at near zero for the rest of the year, gold rose over $30 and silver jumped over 50 cents per ounce. In early trading Thursday, gold is $1,264 per ounce, silver is $15.86 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $417. If you'd like more information about buying or selling gold or silver, give us a call at 800-874-9760.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Oh, Frank! Yeah, that guy is ADD, man. He just off on. There he is. There he is. He's off, man. He just can't be entertained enough. I'm not entertaining enough for him. Okay, so you're back. Where the heck were you, man?
Did you miss me?
Yeah, why do you do this all the time? I got, you know, what am I going to say?
I just feel bad because you don't have anything to say if I'm not here. You know, I know how introverted you are, Ernie.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a few extra minutes in the beginning so get you the vent.
All right, well, let me give you what I wanted to say. I was going to say anyway, but I wanted you to hear it. The the world presence of Donald Trump, and I mean, these guys say the world is laughing at us, you know. Mm. Yeah, you know, yeah, they've seen this kind of thing before, I'm sure. But I'm going, he has a world presence in the form of thousands of employees. His children run international conglomerate business. Of I'm in the hotel of the rich people come luxury, I'm sitting at one of those tables and I'm only 30 whatever years old. Mm-hmm. So These employees include the car valet, the bathroom valet, the caddies at the, you know, I mean, and I got so much information from those people here in Arizona when I was county chair. It was in the media, it was always the cameraman. You know, you got the reporter, the editor, all these guys are bought and paid. Camera guy, he's just technical. He's there holding the camera. But you can see him smiling. You know, you say, they're going, thank God. Somebody say, And it was the camera guys that would always contact me. It was the car valets out at the Wrigley Mansion. Okay. A couple of the guys that were down there, Ron Paul, they would, you know, share. Back in the day, it was golf caddies. And we would think, because they're invisible people as the masters of the universe, talk all this big blah, blah, blah. A lot of it's theater for the hoi polloi that's hanging around and kind of, you should be listening to how important I am at the restaurant, and you're their waiter. So this would just flood into me, and I got a big, giant dose. I get it. But the thing is that Trump's getting that from the same kind of people that are his employees, through his family. All he's got to do is wait for the next family picnic when he's president, and he'll find out what the prime minister of blah, blah, blah thinks straight up from his butler of told his caddy driver. And I'm going, this is a powerful surveillance tool, which he's had for a gazillion years. I bet he's got his own freaking intelligence, you know, community thing. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, $10 billion, you got a feed of information that you rely on. Now, what he reads the papers, I don't know why. What a waste of time that is. You should be reading Freedom Speaking. But the viewers, everybody's so worked up about cable news and how many people they got. Now, how many people in this country? 300 and what? 20 million or something? It's over 300 million. All right. 300 million people. And I realized this when I first started getting involved in the early 90s. I'm going, who the hell cares what these talking heads say? I mean, it's the same five stories every night. They have five stories. It's the same on every network. And in the same order. You go, you know, Tom Brokaw to Dan Rather or something, you know, and you go, click, same story. Click, same story. I go, 300-something million people, and I get the same freaking five stories on all these networks. Who's the guy that creates the bullet points on that? Who's the guy that does a 3x5 card? Is it Drudge? I mean, is that it? Pretty much, you know? So you look at Fox and CNN and MSNBC. All of them put together is 11 million. Now, it was 10.96 million during Super Tuesday as our peak. Oh, then they broke that on Super Tuesday 2, and they added another, I don't know, half a million, okay? Hmm. So 11 point whatever million people in the peak of the POTUS race for 2016, the election of the leader of the free world.
Right.
11 million people. And that's broken up by CNN. Let's see, 4.3 million. We have 5 million for Fox and 2 for MSNBC. So MSNBC is like, you know, half of CNN. So I'm just going, all right. So all of them together, who freaking cares what they think? I'm just like, look, and we're gonna determine the election with ours. No, you're not. And that's what House of Cards is doing. It's all about search engines.
Oh, really?
It's all about the questions. It's all about NSA getting the data for this one guy to do the evaluation to create the list of we call them and we win, to where they go, oh, we just got 80,000 people calling Congress. We want to have and do and this, and kind of because we got the database of the kind of, you know, it's all the Snowden stuff. And so I don't see what these guys are talking around the smoke-filled room. Do they really, they think they matter, and they're freaking screaming like they matter. And what did they say in that clip? They go, you know, well, Trump, he's this and that, and all, he's nothing. He just has like millions of voters.
Ernie, we're trying to hold it back. Yeah, just he just got voted. People vote for him, you know. But that shouldn't count. And I mentioned last week or a couple weeks ago that Jeb Bush was that they found this old quote with Jeb Bush and looked at his strategy for winning the White House. And this is before he threw his hat in the ring and he was going for donors. His whole strategy, he has a PowerPoint talking about how the Jeb Bush campaign will win the White House. And it was not
some other guy.
Huh?
No, who did the PowerPoint?
It was Jeb Bush's people. It was Jeb Bush. So this was basically a Jeb Bush campaign PowerPoint for the big power, you know, the money people, when he raised $130 million right off of the bat to basically scare off all the contenders.
Is that money gone now?
No, he's probably taking a cruise somewhere. But the thing is, $130 million he put together, and the point of that was a shock and awe. It was basically to say, hey, don't even bother throwing your hat in the ring because I already have it, you know, clinched up before it even starts. That's what that was. It was basically saying, I'm the big guy in town. You know, I'm king of the mountain. Get the hell out. And what did that do? It brought in the largest Republican pool of candidates that we've seen in recent times. 17 people. Remember, the whole point of all those super PACs and all that money, Jeb Bush, was to say, yeah, no one would be stupid enough to come at. And instead, he gets 17 people.
The Republican Party's got plenty of stupid.
16 others, that is. Yeah, so that's you know, the Jeb Bush angle. Anyway, but that's the establishment.
Well, the establishment in this series. Have you been watching the circus?
No, and that's the problem. I don't have Showtime, and I keep thinking, should I get it now? I mean, and then this thing keeps going on. Yeah, I probably should get it. If nothing else, I'll certainly buy the series on TV. Well, I don't have time.
You know, eventually, yeah, it'll just.
We're definitely going to watch it. I wish I was seeing it now.
Big Short's out now. You can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I've been wanting to watch it. You know what? Now I can just buy it online. You know, just but then if you don't have your Amazon account anymore, what happens to all those movies you bought? I don't know. Scumbags. Do I get to download them? You know, onto my, you know, drive of something. See, I have the ability here through all my equipment here. Whatever shows up on that screen, you know, over there, if it plays here, it shows up there, record's done. I can do any movie, whatever I want, and have it on and compress the drive if I get what I don't know what they're talking about. All this I can't duplicate because I can, but that's like work.
Well, the other thing I want to mention about Trump being the Trump Report is that his new strategy that since he won Super Tuesday 2, and now it's about if he stays on message, if he just keeps doing with what he's doing, then he has enough delegates. According to the blackboard or the whiteboard, which people have been watching, it's been well predicting that he'll get, can't make this up, exactly 1,237. No. Just the math. I'm just saying the math played out. Now, I know.
He's going to get 1,236.
I know the establishment is going to say, oh, well, I was so close, so therefore we're going to deny you. But
no, but they keep you encouraged. Look, you almost made it.
You almost made it.
Maybe
wait.
Do it next time.
I know. Ernie, hear me out.
Get his daughter.
Ernie, hear me out. Right. What they're saying and they're talking about on Fox and on Glenn Beck and on Rush Limbaugh and all the shows that you guys don't want to watch, which is good and keeps the blood pressure down. They're all discussing that number is not a hard number. Even the establishment people are admitting that if he comes in within 100 points or so, that the establishment still would have to give it to him. So as much as technically, well, because they know what they're realizing, what I said 6-7 months ago, Ernie, 8 to 10, I'm getting all animated,
yeah,
which was it doesn't. You can sit there, and I know our buddy Jeff and others all talk about the weeds and say, well, it's the math and it's already done. The calculus already. It doesn't matter. Like you say, I take your role because at some point the people get so ticked. It doesn't matter about all the rules. It doesn't matter. At some point when it's exposed and people pay attention, unlike the Ron Paul campaign, finally the people say, this is how it works. This is what. Now our people are like, welcome to the party.
Welcome to the party. Put it on the altar, rip its heart out, and vote for Hillary if they have to.
They're crying uncle. Yeah. They're crying uncle. It's not going to happen.
All right.
Trump's going to win.
All right, I got to do is wait. Yeah. Yo, shout out to Sheldon. Okay.
Sheldon, buddy. We're getting your tweets, man. 4409, you're the man.
Okay. And Sheldon's like saying, yeah, the evangelists are smart enough that they're seeing through clues because they're really smart. You know,
we got to have him. Yeah, we got to plug his show next time.
We got to contact Donna. We need to get you on. Just say,
do the archive or no?
Yeah, no, we can.
Okay,
do
you got, so I have one last clip. This is the establishment. It's about a 5-minute deal here, but this is one of the top establishment people. He's a speechwriter for the George Bush campaign, and it's kind of nice, free form of him talking about. Kind of a summary of what I've been discussing this last hour. The establishment is trying to come to terms with this. This person was so almost verbally violent against Trump 5-6 months ago, and it just keeps lessening and lessening. And now, you know, he realizes he's basically crying uncle, that yes, he thought he'd be out and then he's not. And then he, maybe the delegate count issue, and it's not working. Rubio just went down in flames. They can't even support him. Jeb Bush, as much as you keep saying, the Jeb can't win. Even if they put him up there, he has, there's no way that they can take 80% of the vote, anti-establishment vote of Trump and Cruz.
They
and
don't then, care.
I know you say that.
No, what, I tell you what,
but
they
it doesn't.
Do.
I know you're saying that they'll let the Republican Party crash and burn and just turn around and put it behind Hillary because she's establishment. I see that coming too. I see that
they're putting Bush will be up there. Or their desire to get him up is because then they know it doesn't matter. They win either way. That was the whole point. Jeb, Hillary, and if they can't be guaranteed that they're going to get, you know, Hillary, well, then they, you know, gotta at least not have Trump. They keep saying, no, Trump can't beat Hillary. Trump can't beat Hillary. I'm like, man, I'm loving to see this game played out on the international everything, because Trump will, she knows what he's got, I'm sure. And whatever they're going to, anything that they could say about Trump, they've already said. And if they haven't said it, they're just going to make it up, you know. So I can't imagine them not bringing Jeb over, or not Trump. Well, so who? I mean, how? What's the machine? Who's the guy that's going to be their biatch? I'm just going.
It doesn't. They can't. They can't.
Can't. Why can't? What does this can't mean? What do you mean can't?
It's because they're exposed.
If they can.
Everything. If they can.
They don't care.
Exactly. If they can, they will. The point is, this is, I think this
they
is.
They get exposed. They
don't
care.
You know
how
what,
many times have they been exposed?
Ernie, I think this is kind of where it's at, is that if they can, they will. You and I are in complete agreement. The question is, what's the definition of can? You think. And some people who think it's all about the rules, you're saying that they can because the rules that they make up whenever they can.
They don't care about the
rules. I know, but that's how.
The rules.
I know that. That's the point. Your point of view is they can change the rules at any time and do whatever they want, so they can, they will. My definition of can is they can only do it as far as the people are hoodwinked and don't know what they're doing in front of them. That is, I think, at the end of the day, the 6-7 month, you know, debate that we've been having comes down to that moment of what, how do you define can? To me, you can technically do XYZ. You can run a red light whenever you want, but, you know, it's easier to run a red light when there's no cops around and it's 6 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning and there's no cars. If you do it in the middle of rush hour, you know, you can run a red light, but chances are you're going to be caught and it's not going to work. Maybe there's no cops around. Most likely you will. So there, you might get caught. That, I think, is what this is about. I'm not obtuse or clueless in any way about the so-called calculus or about how the rules work and how they change them at the last minute. You know what? Go for it. Go change all the damn rules the day before and see what not just this party does, but the Democrat Party does, because the Democrats also are in favor of, many of them, for Trump. They're joining Trump. You know, Trump is getting Trump is getting a lot of the union votes. Many people who would be for Bernie Sanders, for instance, are voting now for Trump. So he's bringing in all these other candidates. I'm sorry, all these other voters. It certainly is a change. People are paying attention. The ratings are the highest it's ever been. If they turn around and just change the rules, which I know they can, and I know they have done it. They did it to Ron Paul. That's why we're all so ticked. You're so used to them screwing you over because no one's paying attention. Now the world is paying attention, and the whole world is going to see how this so-called democracy works.
God, I've had the same conversation with Papke before he went to Tampa. He goes, the whole world is watching. They're not going to do it then. I go, that's when they do it.
Trump or Ron Paul?
Doesn't matter.
No, it does matter. The world was not watching Ron Paul. I never said this about Ron Paul, ever. I never said this. I said this about Donald Trump.
All right.
Only.
What does Shelton have to say?
Was he on the line?
Shelton.
Hello?
4409, baby. There he is.
All right. Yeah, give us your Trump report, man.
Hey, I just want to say I love the show. I'm kind of addicted to it. It's kind of like watching the Republican debates between you two. It's like one's Trump and one is somebody else. It's like this clash of the titans, man. And it's great because both of them, I see both sides, and it's just really fun.
J. See, my position
you
on...
You both are hardcore, and you both are, you know, it's like you're just battling this out, and it's just fun to watch. It's
okay,
fun
okay.
To
I'll tell you, this is my perspective, and see if this comes out over the air, Shelton, is that Frank is understanding the popularity because he knows the type of person that Trump is, and it's like his family. He can see the connection that they're going to have, and he read The Art of the Deal. He knows the techniques that he's using. He sees and that the populace is rising up, and this is their opportunity, and they will not be denied. My perspective is that they're always denied. You know, there is no way. They do not go quietly in that good night. It does not matter. The only time you get the kind of revolution of change like that, I think that they believe Trump represents. I mean, to us, we're like, yeah, whatever, you know. But they're worried not what philosophy is in charge. It's who's in charge. Because Jeb or Hillary, it's the same philosophy. It's just a different group of people. No, we want our group. No, we want our group. And up above them are people going, "Now we don't give a crap. You know, we're going to get done what we want." Trump may represent, hey, the guys up top, of which the table where they sat around and planned tomorrow the world, is that Trump probably sat at that table many times. Mm-hmm. He sure as hell was funding it. Yep. So there he knows. He's biding his time. He's sitting back. He's chilling. But he launched this, and this is not the first time. I think 96, 2000, there was another reform. Jesse Ventura got him to actually run. He announced. And then pulled because foreign party didn't have their crap together. So because for all of, you know, you create Steiger's Law. So I'm going, okay, here we have the established, they, them, those, with all of the freaking missile strikes and any, you know, made you look of the mushroom cloud people. I'm going, they are going to be in the position of having to decide. Are they going to deny the people and expose themselves? And keep maintain power, or are they going to give up power and let the people have their say? Let me think. What's been the track record there? So you see my point?
I totally see your point, but then I see him.
You hope Frank's right.
Well, it's
come on,
like,
people,
I know exactly where you come from, Ernie. I see it. They would rather vote for Hillary than vote for anybody.
And say so.
Their candidate. But I see exactly where Frank is coming from through this whole thing. I've been listening to it, and I see it. I mean, I see exactly what why they did it, exactly what he's saying. Why they did it to Ron Paul is different. Ron Paul had no money. He didn't have this influence. He didn't have it's a little different trying to do it to Trump. And I'm not saying that they won't do it. But I'm saying it would be really bold.
Well, I think they knew that Ron would eventually, he would pull. And that was the deal.
Yeah, go away like a little rat.
Yeah, and he did.
Yeah.
I don't think they anticipate that they can convince Trump to pull. You can do all this stuff, get all those people and bring them into Republican and expand. And thank you, Ron. That was very nice of you. And here we'll give you head of this committee to oversee Bernanke. And we took him out from under that committee. Sorry about that. Okay, I mean, they always some kind of deal, and then Rand's going to. There's a deal. There's some kind of dynasty of the deal, and I'm going. Nah, we're not dealing. Trump's not dealing. You know, he's just I'm Trump. Yeah, well, what's your philosophy, Trump?
Well, you know, I think
Jim Twitter.
I think like what Shelton was saying. You know, what's interesting is that for Ron Paul, he was drafted by people. He wasn't planning to run. Ron Paul tapped into the anger, but Ron Paul himself wasn't that angry. Donald Trump.
I don't
no,
think
wait,
it
wait, wait.
Was
no
an
one,
angry
no one,
thing.
No one drafted Donald Trump. They thought he was a joke. Donald Trump drafted himself and put himself on everybody. It wasn't like Donald Trump was in the sequel to Freedom the Fascism, right? The movie, the documentary. That's where Ron Paul really took off. Donald Trump, he put himself there. Donald Trump understood that anger and he tapped into it because he's angry himself. And I really believe he is.
America
I don't think this is
anymore.
An act. So that's doesn't why.
Win. Steve that's, Wynn, my friend,
that's
Luke,
the difference.
Win.
That's
Wynn can't even win.
But Ron Paul, my biggest frustration with the Pauls was the lack of anger. I felt like I can't use a certain thing on this topic on the radio, but it's like it's so-called tease. You know, it just builds and builds, and it's like just tell the world how you're getting screwed over. And Ron Paul goes, "Well, Ronald Trump's like, let me tell you how it's done. Here are my attorneys. The lawyers are going to be at the polling place. He's a whole other ball of wax.
The Ron thing. I like the way." he did it, really, for the long term. I know a lot of people would rather him, you know, insert himself in, because he wouldn't, you know, like, you know, just start talking, debate. He'd raise his hand. I want to be recognized. He played the game. He's Mr. Polite. Yeah, he just, that's the way it was. And the thing is that you look at that and you go, why isn't he more angry? Because he was ecstatic of the impact he was already having. And he wasn't willing to risk what was already happening for some perceived slight of them hammering on him, because his people were the ones that got angry. His people took that inspiration and him being up there and taking the arrows on the chest and then bouncing off, because they were the ones that were the angry ones. The people were, and they did it with humor. They had fun. Mm-hmm. It was something that they haven't seen the likes of and probably won't for a long time again. That kind of creativity is not what's going into Trump. It's the coloring book. You know, it's a, you know, now with Ron, you'd have the same kind of thing, which I'm sure there probably was. Mm-hmm. But with Trump, it was just, it's commercialized. You know, it's fun. It's recognized for what it is. It's just, we're mad as hell, not going to take it anymore. And they're going to, oh, yeah? When have you ever said, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore, to they, them, those, and they go, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I guess you're not. No.
Well, I want to, I'll get off the phone here because I want to see you two bash each other some more. Hammer them.
That's what this turned into.
but one quick thing is, you said that he may align with Ted Cruz, and that's why I don't know. I mean, you said a lot of stuff that has been totally correct. I mean, you've been right on the money, so who am I to second guess?
He can. But if they're trying to, if there's some little shenanigans, they go and they go, oh, yeah, well, we just combined, and now it's, you know, P and B,
yeah,
BP and get over it.
Yeah. I see that. He just called, just tweeted today that Ted was a liar. I mean,
yeah. No.
I mean, if he's trying to be Mr. Nice Guy, he ain't showing it. He just did another tweet morning.
No,
I think he would, if he was going to do a VP, it'd be Ben Carson, and he'd have all the evangelicals. And he don't need the evangelicals anyway. He won them in the South anyway. So
okay, see if this rings true. Chris Christie, being the first, he gets to pick.
Yep.
Okay? Supreme Court.
San Napolitano role.
You know, yeah, he's going to be Supreme Court or Chief of Staff or Attorney General. There's a lot of opportunities for Christie.
Yep.
Okay? Then you have Ben Carson. Well, he's at the very least a cabinet position or something. He could be Surgeon General, whatever. You know, he's like, you want to be ambassador? Who gives a crap? And then you have, I bet Huckabee and Santorum for standing behind the Trump podium in Iowa is going to,
oh my God,
you know, get something. I mean, you know, they'll, you know, throw him a bone of, you know, something. Then you have Sarah Palin, you know, gag me with a forklift.
Oh, God.
But I'm just, you know, so she's going to be, you know, touting something, Fox News, look at my, you know, my legs. And then, see, who else did he get, you know, came out? You know, there's you know, a lot of stars and stuff, you know, that are, you know, supporting
him. He's picking and choosing with it. Sheldon, it's definitely, you have a really good point. Look, he doesn't want Cruz in any way, and I get it. But I think that's his escape valve. Ultimately, Donald Trump said himself, I'm a closer. I love that. I close the deal, which means he's going to get the delegates. I actually think Trump will get the delegates. I think this is all much about nothing. My main prediction is I think he will get the delegates. I think that the momentum is going to shift. Kasich won't be getting any more states for
a
while.
Right when I think that that's when they pull their crap.
Yeah. But as long as he gets the delegates, it's a done deal, at least officially. And I don't think he'll be forced to take anyone else's people for VP. Like Reagan had to take Bush. However, if it's brokered, if it turns into the contested so-called, by the way, that's what they're using. That's what they keep doing on Fox.
It's not brokered.
It's contested. It's like veal. You're not eating a little baby lamb. You're eating veal. So that's what they're doing with exactly. It's all word game that they're doing on Fox.
Holy
cow.
Yeah. But,
calf.
Yeah. Veal.
Yeah. Veal. I thought it was calf. Is that goat? Or what do you say?
Yeah.
Calf, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Nah, I guess I did wrong, yeah. Anyway, right. So, I'm thinking of a lamb with mint jelly, so anyway. But the point is, I was thinking of baby lamb. Anyways, yeah, right, veal. So, the thing is,
does not want to take an establishment because they will literally, I think, stab him in the back and then take it all back. So he can't do that. So Cruz is perfect because Cruz is like the abandoned stepchild. Nobody wants him at this point. And no offense to any stepchildren out there. But the point is, that's where he's at. And Trump knows the leverage he has over Cruz. So if he does not clinch it, which I think he will, and close the deal, then the establishment will play their games and they're going to try and put Kasich or Mitt Romney. The whole thing is a joke and they'll bolt. And therefore, Cruz knows the only way he can even keep any power is to saddle up with Trump. And at least he's not establishment, that the establishment will therefore kill Trump in order to put Cruz in. Honestly, the biggest problem will be Cruz because I don't trust Cruz. I'll never turn my back on Cruz. I don't trust him at all. He's the guy you have to worry about.
There's a lot
but he could get in by putting Cruz in.
Yeah, and he'd have to have Cruz. You know, what do you think of Cruz, Shelton? I mean, a lot of people been involved in politics or had people I respect have nice things to say about Cruz, but I bet you that's before they actually got to see him debate. You know, just ew. And you heard on the shows, you know who I think Cruz reminds me of?
Vampire.
Yeah. Who? Trent Franks.
Yes, exactly. Like he's exactly like.
Wait, this is Arizona talk for
he
you.
He is a clone of Trent Franks.
Thank you.
Exactly.
I'm not the only one that sees this. Trent Franks is a congressman here that I know well. I mean, when he had first announced in '94, Don and I are at the head table of the only politician I ever contributed to because he's a friend and he worked in the nursery at our church and raised the kids and I thought he was kind of a zealot on abortion but he was pro-life but he was I thought I knew him and I thought he was good. I'll give you my $10 when I'm poor and we'll put us on the list and he thought it prudent at that juncture to have the Libertarian chairman sitting at his table when they announced and did a big thing whatever. So I'm going, there's like 700-800 people there. So I was honored, but it was a friend thing. Once he got in, he went dark immediately. And I'm just going, Trent, look, man, damn, seriously? And there's a lot of, in fact, there was a documentary done on Barry Hess running for governor that an ASU student did. And he goes up and he goes, yeah, what do you think of Trent? He goes, well, let me tell you what Trent will say. Trent will say how great friends we are and how libertarian he is, but it's all BS. And blah, blah, blah. So he just dumped on him. Mm-hmm. Then they cut right to Trent. Frank's going, oh, yeah, we're good friends. And Barry is great. So it was just, and he went so down the dark side. And what he made an argument to me when he did the he was the final vote that passed Schedule D, the drugs for Medicare. And it was a big, oh my God, we can't have that. And he was the deciding vote. Well, he got the ride on Air Force One then. He's like, he's on Air Force One. So he got on Air Force One, but they landed in Vegas. They didn't come to Arizona because they knew there's people, man, freaking a lynch mob or something, right? So he did. I got to go on Air Force One, take a picture, and I stand in the doorway of President Bush, and that was my payout. I go, that's it? That was it? Seriously? They were at the Capitol doing some Second Amendment thing where he was there. And I'm going, that's it? And he goes, look, this was the deal. This is what he told me. He goes, if I voted for the Schedule D, and increase, $1 trillion of, subsidized drug money, addicting all senior citizens. He goes, if I signed off on that he promised me that he would appoint a constitutional Supreme Court justice. And I go, isn't that what he's supposed to do?
Exactly.
I'm going, seriously? That was your payoff? And then what did we get anyway? I don't even care. Cruz. He reminds me so much. I mean, you've met, Trent and everything. A congressman here is kind of slimy, whatever. But I mean, come on, Shelton.
I met him. I've interviewed him. I've got him on camera. And
oh, nice.
He's got a Bible on one hand and an Israeli flag on the other.
Right.
And he's a total neocon, warmongering slime ball.
Same demeanor, same kind of, disdain for the lower, you don't agree with me, Cruz. Frank.
Same cadence, the way they speak.
That evangelical kind of, it's just... you didn't see that before?
It's condescending.
Yeah. You didn't see that before, Shelton, or did it just ring true when I said it?
No, I think you said it before, and then I said, wow. You know, like, it bulb went off. I said, hell yeah. It's exactly what he
is. So that's why I can't get any kind of, you know, pass on. I just can't, because I go, I know this type.
No, his wife works for Goldman Sachs. I mean, oh, yeah. Great, yeah. No way. I mean, that, he's done.
No, remember, I'm in no way any fan of Kurz. I'm just saying that if he doesn't.
I know that.
Yeah,
I know
they're playing the delegate
game.
Because the establishment says they hate Kurz. I don't know if they do that much or not. I mean,
if they're going to lose control, they could buy off Kurz. They already do. They have super PACs for Kurz. So, therefore,
yeah, he's Israel,
Kurz is bought off.
Wall
Kurz
Street.
Is bought. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you
so
know,
if they have to, they'll suck it up and go for Kurz to keep someone who they cannot control in. But for Trump, all I'm saying is the last ditch way that if they push him against the wall, he ultimately will give Kurz whatever, because Kurz will sell out his principles, like we're talking Trent Frank here. So he basically will sell out, and if it's going off into the wilderness and being a regular common Joe after this, or being VP, or being whatever that Trump gives him, he will take it rather than being thrown out into the dust, because everything Kurz has done has been to have power, to be, and he is insecure. If you just watch him, Kurz is an extremely insecure guy, and to have the alpha dog throw you a bone.
Saith the doctor.
No, he is. He is. I watch stuff all day. Watch these guys and how their mannerisms. And when they're not on camera, you see them from a side. You can see. And also the choices that they make and how they strategize or don't.
You know what Trump does? He doesn't say anything. I mean, he repeats the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
I know. Well, they all do. They all do. It's just
But it's a play.
Trump does sound,
and
Trump,
you feel like there's something secret he's not telling us.
No, but Sheldon's right, though. The other guys, they always say that Trump doesn't say anything, but if you listen to the other guys, they don't say anything anyway. I don't know how they get away with it. Yeah, exactly. If you listen to them, they don't say anything. So, Kasich's idea is, Trump doesn't have any ideas, but I do. I'll tell you how you solve this problem, that problem.
Oh, his wife's a coal miner's daughter and all this
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
I've heard that a billion times.
Okay, now tell me, Sheldon, what is he?
What Kasich does is all he says is, we're going to take the two people who disagree, put them in a room, and lock the door. That's his answer to everything. And every candidate has their own. You know? So no one has an idea, but Trump gets nailed for it. So, Sheldon, what do you think?
Okay. Trump, what is it that you think that to the population, you're in, what are you, Kansas City?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Kansas City, you know, you just had the primaries there. They got their delegate, whatever, who cares? You know, and you probably had commercials in case you watch TV. But I'm going, what do you think the message from Trump is? Vote for me because what?
Well, I'll tell you what, he lost here in Kansas pretty bad. And
really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because every other channel, when you're here, if you're on AM and you push the seek button, every other channel, I'm telling you, every other channel is a preacher, God bless you, take out your Bible. Every other station is a Bible thing. And then when you turn it on 98, the Clear Channel, it's either Glenn Beck, Hannity, Mark Levin, one of those. Well, guess who Glenn Beck just promotes day after day after day?
I don't know.
Is Kurz.
Kurz all day.
So guess who my mom votes for?
Yeah.
Kurz.
Yeah.
She thinks, and I'm saying it's totally evangelical.
Yeah, Glenn Beck, that libertarian him, yeah.
Yeah, the libertarian, right?
Not.
Keep telling my mom, it's like, he's not a libertarian. I mean, if he says it enough, just like Trump, if you say something enough, they believe it.
Yeah, it was Neil Bortz. It was Barry Young here. All these guys are going around when they see the wind, kind of, and it's the easiest way of popular, you make libertarian popular, well, then they want to redefine the term. That's why I like leave me aloneist or voluntarist or anarchist. Well, anarchist doesn't even really describe. I think voluntarist is probably really good, or leave me aloneist is my favorite. But I'm this is go ahead, Sean.
I was just saying I think that it, you know, that all the rigging in Florida and he still blew him out. I mean, it's just
well, yeah.
I think that
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but for Florida, you were mentioning Florida. It's interesting, and Trump was right. They spent more money. That was the last stand to technically just blast him from the delegate count. And they spent, I don't know, 100 million or what was it, 30, I forget, 30 million, some crazy amount. It's never been done before at one time. Every super PAC got together and blasted the state of Florida. So what you saw in Kansas is probably nothing compared to what happened in Florida. And the kicker was they spent more money than ever on negative ads against one human being in the history of probably the world. And yet his ratings went up. His poll numbers went up. And he just completely destroyed Rubio.
Smelled the desperation.
Yeah, yeah. So did you find that in Kansas? I mean, have they used so many ads? I hear what you're saying. It's evangelical, but...
They were running ads here, too, against Trump.
But
Trump had his own little commercials, too, I was seeing.
Well, with Trump, he went to Kansas, right? Did you go to see him, or did you hear about it? No one went there?
No, he flew in. He barely won Missouri, I mean, by like 0.2%.
Yeah.
That's kind of evangelical, too. But see, those evangelical states, they're gone. He doesn't need Cruz now. I mean, he don't need any of them.
Yes,
all
good
those
point.
States he won. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to win, you know, how is Cruz going to beat Trump in California?
Right.
How?
Right. Or Pennsylvania.
I mean, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Any of those states.
When's
so
California
win
up?
Wyoming or something.
Yeah,
or exactly. Arizona. He may have a chance in Arizona, but I doubt it. I think Arizona's going Trump all
the
way.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's all right. He's not even coming.
Yeah,
I mean, well, he is, probably. Actually. By the way, 4409, I didn't say this on the air, but I have two VIP tickets to see Ted Cruz tomorrow night.
Where?
I do. He's coming to Ted Cruz. And guess who his buddy is? His VIP guest is the former governor, Rick Perry. So I'm going to get to see
here in Arizona.
Here in Arizona. So Rick Perry's.
Rick Perry. They have to go to Texas to get somebody to stand up there with them.
They got Rick Perry and Ted Cruz. And they're having 2-3 rallies today that are smaller ones. And then tomorrow is the big one. It's at some like Baptist church or something, of course. I got tickets as media, VIP media for the Freedom's Phoenix.
Oh,
so
that's so cool.
I got that from you, 409. Yeah, I wish you were here.
Are you going to go be a disruptor?
I'm not as good as you. By the way, Ernie, you didn't really do an introduction to 4409. People haven't heard, but this man is a celebrity we're talking to and has more gonads than most anyone that I know as far as a disruptor. You're the guy that we just turn on people and say, here you go.
Okay,
here's your target.
I think it's time that, you know, now's a good time after you kind of, you know, wound it down. Now's the time on this, you know, podcast version, archive, all the people that have listened this long that know where the number 4409 came from. Come on, Shelton, tell them.
I can't. Just like you. You forced Greenspan to give up his name. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going there.
There is a reason that it was 4409. And so it's now it'll be the secret. You know, there should be like a contest. Yeah, a pool.
Well, just so you know, Shelton, there's a coloring book page with Trump's picture on for you to color. Next time you're in, you can sign it on, your autograph to one of them.
Yeah, have you been watching any of the videos, Shelton, or just audio?
No, just audio. I've been listening to
audio. There's a Trump coloring book, and if you... Okay, the guy is M.G. Anthony, so if you put... The Trump coloring book, Anthony, I bet you it comes up.
Oh, it comes right up. Amazon sells them now.
You look at all the images, and we're sitting here with our, you know, colored pencils and crayons and everything, and everybody comes over here, we're just sitting, I got like a big pad, you know, to put it on like you're in bed or something. I've done two. Barry did one. Cernick's done one.
Yeah, I heard.
You know, they're really cool. So I think we might.
I want to do one.
Yeah.
Do one. It'd be funny.
You know,
well, we'll
ship it to him.
Yeah, exactly. We definitely want you to contribute if you can.
4409.
You know, one last point. I was going to mention the beginning of the show a few hours ago, and I want to bring up now about the Libertarians for Trump. And since we have Shelton on the air, I have something I was thinking about last night at the dinner as you were all discussing.
4409 should do a video for Trump.
No.
Yeah,
no.
That would be a good one.
No.
So I was.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking more, just as a kind of a large point for a moment. Not too long, but the idea of libertarians and why we're having that fissure, just like the Republicans are having that fissure amongst themselves, I keep saying. You know, they were all establishment, but now you're seeing the break in the standard neocons, and you're having a vetting process in the Libertarian Party, just what we're seeing here. I mean, that's why you said you're listening to this show, because you have Ernie and I, we're both libertarian-minded, and yet we are seeing this through a different prism. And so I kind of wonder if maybe we're seeing a distinction or separation in two types of libertarianism or philosophy, which I would say, and this is just off the cuff, that there's the philosophical libertarian and then there's the pragmatist libertarian. And I think people like Ernie would be maybe, and I'm not trying to put him, and he's sitting right here, but many of us are maybe more the philosophical. They're more of the purist to say, this is it. And if you don't follow these rules, whereas you have others like Peter Schiff, for example, myself, which maybe we use terms like libertarian conservative, which maybe is not always as accurate.
Maybe
I don't know.
Honest.
But the idea being that we've been around this so long, we love the principles of libertarianism. But at the same time, like any principle, liberalism, conservatism, you can't have a purist mentality and actually win, especially when the whole deck is against you. Now, Ernie's way we're looking is, well, you can win, maybe not by the rules, but by saying the rules don't matter and let the culture change and it'll evolve to that point. And I respect that, and maybe to some way we get there.
This
but
is I just think the, supporting evidence but, of the culture shifting.
Well, it is, but the pragmatist side, I think, is where you're seeing this division, people like myself, where I'm so angry at them keeping out the libertarian view. You can have all this libertarian philosophy and be all purist, but how's it working out for you when you're not even allowed in the debates? When they kick out the League of Women Voters after Ross Perot was in, and they say, okay, you know what? We're going to have the Presidential Selection Committee run by both the two parties. We're going to keep out anybody else. Now, I understand the rules don't matter, and we always go back to that, but at some point, I just feel we have so many good views to present. The country is going down the tubes, and at least show some anger and say, look, we have views. These views, we've predicted things. Peter Schiff was right. Ron Paul, which is a whole bunch of us, Charles Goyette, yourself, Shelton. I mean, many of us have said this stuff for years. We've been denied for years. This stuff that everyone's learning about delegates now, you know, you and I and Ernie Wilson and most of this audience are saying, where the hell have the rest of you people been? This is, of course, what's been going on. Now they're finally joining in. That is what I think the pragmatist libertarian anger and this Libertarians for Trump movement is based in.
Hey, you know what? You make, as I said, you're both right. Like, if there's two pieces of cake, I could pick one, and they're both pretty good. They're both like, that's why it's fun to, it's like, I see this point and I see this point.
Yeah, but I'm red velvet.
It's either, here's the thing, you can go down both the roads, and both the roads are right. And the thing about Trump is, yeah, he's said a lot of psycho stuff, like, you know, especially, you know, when he seems, I can't figure out whether he's being serious or whether it's a game that he's playing for the old white hairs.
It's a game.
It's a game.
He's seriously playing this game of Go.
Honestly, Shelton, it's a combination. A lot of it's a game. It's for attention. But also, it's basically the show to the world that he's sticking it to the establishment. He's not playing by the rules. But thirdly is, this is probably most important people don't realize, in the art of the deal, you see this, is that he understands that when people negotiate, you know, you kind of, let's say you both agree, you both kind of know the cost for what you're negotiating, let's say it's $50. And so one guy lowballs it at 25, the other guy highs it to $75, and you each kind of negotiate down to about 50. That's kind of what normally happens in a deal. Trump's strategy is to blow past that, and instead of saying, okay, I think it's worth 50, so I'm going to offer 75, his idea is that he'll sit there and he'll offer, you know, I mean, he'll demand, for instance, you know, $1,000. So he just blows through and makes you go, what? What do you mean? $1,000? I was expecting you to say 75, and we're going to negotiate. $1,000, you're crazy, man. And basically, by doing that, he throws off the opponent. That's what he does. He throws something so bombastic, it makes you go, what? And then he can negotiate from a higher leveraging position once he's thrown you off. So that's what I think he's doing here. And I said this before on the air, you know, that's what his strategy is. So when he sits there and he says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and bombastic, he throws that stuff out so he has that much more wiggle room to negotiate later when people
people take him seriously, then he can negotiate upward. That's a strategy. So, yeah, it is a combination of entertainment and getting attention, but it's also a strategy he's going to use later for the leverage.
You know, one thing, Shelton, I wanted to ask you, I was talking to Glenn Jacobs and Tim Fry, and they're in the South, you know, Tennessee and Upper Florida, which might as well be Alabama. And these guys are saying, man, the Islamophobia is just getting crazy. He is just amped up. All the Bubbas are coming out. What's it going? What's it like there in Kansas City?
Same deal. You know, that's the thing I don't like about what he does. But the only reason why I like Trump is because I want to see the neocon side die.
Yes, that's where I'm at.
I want to see the McCains go away. I want to see Lindsey Graham go off in his corner,
yes,
in his closet, where he's probably in.
Yeah, no, I think that's a common sentiment. And it just doesn't matter what they bring up, because people just don't care because he's not them, at least perceived that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only attraction to him is like, it's what we wish Ron Paul would have done. Come out and just swing.
Well, that's one thing that Frank was saying, and I've been going, I kind of like that he let the people swing for him, and he got to play grandfather. And I think it was better as building a foundation for someone like Trump to come into this. Because, see, that's my point. I'm going, the groundswell and the people rising up, you know, that's the only thing that's going to win this thing. And that, sooner or later, eventually, will take place. It's going to be a colored revolution of some square of we're not leaving, and it's going to be a real one, not this Occupy or Tea Party crap.
But Ernie's point is exact. I think it's a really good point. That in spinning a little bit what Ernie said, is that I think what Ron Paul did was he showed how it doesn't work, and he played the game straight. He said, if you play by the rules, this is what they do to you.
Yep.
And the reason that was so important is because that is what armed Trump. When Trump said, I will run third party if you don't treat me fairly, remember, I've said this a million times, and he said this, it's not about running negative ads about fairly. His definition of fairly was, I saw what you did to the Ron Paul people, not that whether I would support Ron Paul or not, but I saw what you guys do and how corrupt this process is. Now I'm armed. Now my attorneys watched what you did, and you can't pull that crap on me when I do it. So if it wasn't for Ron Paul playing it straight, I don't think Trump would have, if he even ran, I don't think he would have known enough to circumvent what they're trying to do, and it's failing this time. So yeah, it's a good point.
I agree too. It's like, well, I got to get off the phone, guys. I want to see you guys argue these technicalities out for the rest of how many hours you're going to go.
Yeah, I know.
No, we got to go much longer.
I got some stuff I got to do, and I'm going to...
Oh, come on. I want you to finish.
All right. Hey, Shelton, this is awesome to talk to you, man. You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man.
Hey, wait. Before you go, how about your channel? You want to plug your channel? Is it still up on YouTube, or they take it down?
Yes. Just go on to YouTube and type in 4409.
All right.
409.
Yep. There's a lot of good stuff on there.
good to hear from you guys. I love the show.
All right.
Thanks,
see ya.
Bye.
So anyway, unless there's anything else, I just wanted to sign off with this last clip from Fox, which is...
I got a couple of things.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. Well, before you do, I just want to let people know there's a clip we'll play in a moment, then a few moments, which is the speechwriter for the George Bush W campaign, the speechwriter, and definite establishment. And it's fascinating to listen to him talk, because you can almost hear him arm wrestling, and he's about to cry uncle to this movement. Doesn't quite, but you can hear his thinking process in this 5-minute interview. So we'll close with that. But go ahead, Ernie.
With whatever I want.
Well, I'm just saying, normally we close with a clip. So that's the clip.
Well, you know what I was going to do is after the clip, I'm going to read an article that everybody keeps saying why I think and I don't know and this is not going to happen. I predicted this. You know, it going this way. This is going to the crowd. But in the end, it's not going to be they, them, those giving up. It's not. They're not because they don't have to. It doesn't cost them any skin for them to go, we'll all raise in a billion and it goes over here to maintain our access to trillions. I mean, yeah, but we need to that be wrong. Oh, okay. You know, well, the decision was made 14 layers up and they kind of just pushed a button, make it go work. I saw it happen when they did the TARP. Here, it was the 25th anniversary, I think it was, of the Goldwater Institute, and they had it at the Arizona Biltmore. And a bunch of the protests were outside doing the, you know, John Shattuck, the national socialization of the economy isn't fascist when I do it, John Shattuck, because he's the one that brought it back, Republican, whatever. So I was in the event, you know, at the Biltmore, and everybody, all these neocons of the people, the Republican machine of what they were, man, head was down. They saw their job was over. They weren't going to have any more money coming to them. They made it clear to them, the TARP doesn't pass, you're done. You're off the gravy train, because that is our gravy train. And if the TARP doesn't pass, you guys just might as well start looking for something. I got calls from the guys, everybody, political, whatever, please, please, but if we don't, then this will happen. And they were fighting for their job. That's what was going on. And to think that that entire machine for this presidential election cycle isn't more or at least as important as the TARP getting passed for these guys is to be naive. They are not going to go away. And now I'm looking at the schedule here, and it has, let's see, 322 is Arizona along with Utah. So there's like 110 delegates about, you know, over 100 for that day. Then it goes North Dakota, Wyoming, and that's on the 1st and 5th of April. Then April 19th is New York. That's 95 delegates, so that's a nice little chunk. Then there's a bunch of others. California is not until the end, which is June 7th, for California, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota. And California is 172. I think that's the largest one. Isn't that the largest one of all of them? Yeah, I think that's the largest one. So you have all of these delegates up. Let me see. What's the 155 was Texas, so that was a chunk. So the largest delegate count is coming out of California, and it's at the end of the primary process. So we may not know until June, you know, the end of the first week in June before, you know, who's what. So I'm going, okay.
Well, it's supposed that there's a little lull right now. After Arizona, there's going to be a lull, and we're not going to have many states going for a few weeks, so until next month. So this is kind of like the calm before the last movement.
Yeah,
normally, normally the decision's already made. Keep in mind some of the problems that they're going to have. Think about this. Normally at this point, and especially going into the convention, we already know who's put everyone away. I mean, aside from when we fought, you know, John McCain and Mitt Romney up to the convention, and then they pulled out. But the thing is, normally we already know who the person's going to be. And keep this in mind, the convention, the party for the Republican, for unification, is designed around the nominee. So when McCain is in, everything is about John McCain. You know, all the posters are John McCain. They make the videos about John McCain's life, like a little bio, remember, or Mitt Romney. And I think the first time they ever did a video for someone else was the concession for Ron Paul during the Mitt Romney deal after Rand, you know, bailed and endorsed Mitt Romney. But, you know, Ron Paul wasn't even there speaking, but they gave him that little video. Remember, they had the forest and the trees or something, and some video talking about how this guy Ron Paul, you know, influenced young people. And then, thank you, come again, out. And of course, they took everyone's signs away at the convention. But the thing is, that convention is designed as the ultimate party for that candidate. This is a whole different deal, because if you have a brokered, and I'll say broker because I don't care about contested. Well, let's just say what it is. It's going to be brokered. The thing is, if it gets to that point, and we honestly don't know, I mean, it should be Trump, I mean, at this point, but they're going to try and push an establishment, whatever. Think about the dynamic or how it'll be advertised. Think about, you know, what kind of videos do they play? You know, are they going to allow signs in for both candidates or ban them both? I mean, normally the RNC turns over the checkbook to whoever the presumptive nominee is. In this case, they don't know. And even if they did know it's Trump, they probably don't want to turn over the checkbook to him and say, hey, you know, here's the open checkbook to the RNC. Design your own party, Trump. Have fun at it. You know, that's probably not going to happen. So we have that leading up, of course, as far as with these other states. So I think, though, he's still going to amass more delegates. I think you're starting to see, especially with Fox and others, I think we're starting to see some fatigue of this race. And every time
you know, Trump gets most states or most delegates. And then, of course, Cruz gets on TV and says, I won today. You know, even though I can't win a state, I won and I did great. And we collected more delegates and the people spoke. And I am the only candidate, the only person who has beat Donald Trump. Then it turned into, I am the only person that beat Donald Trump in most states compared to others. And now I'm the only candidate that's won in states that are not my home state. That's his new thing now since Kasich won Ohio. So he keeps like changing his message. And I think people on Fox and others, the people are saying, okay, this was fun, but you know, it's the same old, which leads to the last strategy that this is huge or huge, as they say. And that is, Ernie, I assume you heard, is that Donald Trump now has, as yesterday, announced he is not attending the next debate. Fox has the next political presidential debate that's supposed to be this, I guess this weekend, I think it was supposed to be the next debate before Arizona. Well, it turns out Trump's like, you know, I'm busy. And he's attending a press conference. I think it's a meeting and he's going to hold a press conference. And don't go, I may be a little bit off on this, but I think it's for some organizations for the state of Israel. And at this conference, he's going to be making an announcement. And it sounds like what the announcement is going to be is he is going to announce his foreign policy team. So that's a huge deal that he's already, first of all, acting presidential, which is the real deal. He's also demonstrating a foreign policy team, which I think will say a number of things. One, it does demonstrate his loyalty to Israel and that he's not obtuse to that whole problem. Also, it'll show the quality of people that he's putting in, and people will start to get an understanding of how he thinks and how he works. The problem that people don't seem to get with Trump is that they keep thinking Trump is going to show up and have all these ideas like Rubio and Jeb, and they all have all kinds of ideas about how I'm going to do it when I'm king, but they don't realize A, they're the executive branch. They're not the legislative branch. Okay. And number two is that they make these promises. They never come true, right? They whittle them away. They lie. They do a Trent Franks and whatever. And so it doesn't happen. And people are so tired of Lucy pulling the ball away from Charlie Brown that it doesn't matter anymore. They don't care what these promises are. So they're willing to go with Trump, who doesn't give specifics. But what Trump's strength is, and I've said this from day one, is he does what Ronald Reagan learned to do. Again, I can't put them together in the same sentence. And that is Ronald Reagan knew how to put and assign the right people in positions. Many politicians can't do that. Politicians that are they're so self-centered. Clinton was a perfect example. Clinton rose to power because he basically, you know, got favors from everybody to get into power at an early age. He owed a lot of favors. So when he was governor, I'm sorry, when he became president, he put Billy Bob in as Secretary of Treasury or something, and nothing worked because he didn't trust those people in those positions. It was just out of political expediency. But Trump doesn't have those liabilities. He doesn't owe favors to people like that. And like Ronald Reagan, Trump has gotten where he's at by understanding where to put the right people. Hell, he did a whole reality show on how he picks people and what he looks for. This whole thing has been his interview to the American people about how he delegates.
Oh, I know. You know when they always do the war room, you know, they're sitting around that big mahogany table and they have the people like that. There's going to come a time he's going to be probably more open with his cabinet stuff. That they take the picture and then they kick the press out and everybody else and decide the rulers of the world. You know, yeah, he's going to be in there one time. There's got to be somebody on the hot seat. You're fired.
You're fired.
No. You got to do it one time. Give me one, man. Come on.
Well, I'm still predicting that when he wins and he puts his hand on the Bible, I can imagine all of America saying, "You're hired." I know it sounds pretty cheesy, but I'm just saying, I have a feeling. I think that's going to play into this.
That'll be the front page graphic at the day after the election.
Yeah, you're hired.
You're hired.
You're hired. Yeah. I'm telling you, that's coming.
All right. Okay, now this is what we're going to do. I'm contemplating. I want to get this in because a lot of these points came up. I was looking for another article, and I found one that I wrote Monday, November 3rd, 2008. I think that was the day before the election, you know, or a week before, whatever. It was right before the election in 08. It's titled, "We Are Free in Ourselves" by Ernest Hancock. I forgot all about this. And what I was looking for was voting never brought freedom to anyone. And the bottom line of that was, it's how you do the questions and all that. And I built up and, you know, Reagan came in and they promised all this stuff that they never did. And then the contract on America in 94 and Perot, you know, 92 and, you know, all I just described all this thing, the things that we're talking about. This is not new. They've been screwing with people forever. And I'm going into the questions and then the issues and the blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, you know, the issues are influenced by the questions asked and by exactly how the questions are worded by the media, the pollsters, and the politicians. This influence is now, however, being steadily displaced as individuals use the internet to ask their own questions. This is 2000 that I wrote this. And seek answers from people who have firsthand knowledge. Influence of government and traditional media has been dwindling to the point where libertarians will soon be begged to participate in national presidential debates so someone will watch them. But by then, the freedom movement will have already taken to the streets with growing numbers of individuals demanding to be left alone, regardless of any vote totals, whether accurate or not. That's my prediction, that it's not going to, it just doesn't matter. The real vote, you're right, the people will have their freaking say. They always have throughout history, everywhere, eventually, you know, they suffer, you know, all the slings and arrows of government until they're not sufferable anymore, and then, yeah, revolution. Every time. Is this the revolution? I don't know. But it sure as hell is more supporting evidence of it's a coming, okay? So then there was another article, I think, this is while I was had run for national chair in 08. We had gone to the national convention. They tried to make it the Bob Barr Levolution and even the Chuck Baldwin Levolution. I'm going, God, you guys just don't get it. You know, there is nobody in charge. I can't, point and it, one of them, like Karl Rove. I go, that's not what this was about. It was about the empowerment of every individual to express themselves. We are freeing ourselves. Now, I'm going to end with that. Because it looks like it's pretty lengthy. It's going to take me probably 5 minutes to read this. Mm-hmm. So I'll go ahead and do that, but we got a clip that we want to do
first. We'll do that first and we'll read that.
I'll finish off with this, and then I was very good and quiet today. So
you
got to sit there and listen to my article.
Hey, wait. Actually, believe it or not, I have a question. No, I have a question for you. I'm very serious. Where the hell is the Libertarian Party? I mean, all this is going on. I mean, where are they?
I don't know. I talked to Judge Buttrick last night. He's going to go to the Libertarian Convention this year. I go, you want to speak? Yeah, somebody asked me. So I go, I'll check with him and see if
Well,
they
for any of you listeners out there, if you happen to have found the Libertarian Party somewhere under a rock, please give us a call. Let us know where you found them.
Well, they got, you know, John McAfee and Gary Johnson and Daryl Perry and the Politano's producer guy from Fox News. You know, these guys are, you know, going to be up there. I go, what do you think? They're going to hit double digits, get 10% or something? Nah. But they may get 4 or 5.
Yeah, but this country is going through an historic national discussion of reckoning about where we go in this country. Trump is coming in. He's being considered libertarian a little bit. And the Libertarian Party's still probably arguing over, I don't know, some case law somewhere about the Constitution and how paragraph 6 is different.
Well,
that's the problem with the Libertarian Party. I hate to say it.
We are freeing ourselves. You know, the general election of November 4th, 2008 will inform us once again that government has won. I just changed the date on this thing. I guarantee it. I haven't even read it. I don't even remember. I barely remember doing this. And I'm going, and it's on some LDS Freedom Forum. I mean, you know, I mean, come on, man. You know, are you on the LDS Freedom Forum? Okay, so I'll do, Donna's putting it up and have it in written form in the third hour. But
so we do the clip?
Yep.
Okay, so just guys, so you guys know, this is a clip of, I mentioned real quick, this is of the establishment being interviewed. This is one of the top guys. He's the speechwriter for George Bush. He's a commentator on Fox. He's been against Trump from day one. But this is another example of how they're slowly coming to terms and how they're trying to change in their mind. Like, you can actually, if you watch this enough, unfortunately for me, is you start to see how they're trying to talk themselves into where they're being boxed in. They're being boxed in. They're starting to see it. They realize they can't get out and they can't
pull the wool over, despite this argument that Ernie and I are not going to do again, but at least for today, is that they're starting to realize that they had the tools to screw us over like they normally do, but they realize everyone's watching. Thanks to Trump and all the ratings, people are watching every moment, every tweet of this. They can't pull it off, and they can't believe that their last-minute rule changes and all of this aren't going to help them this time. Anyway, this is a little insight, and it's about a few minutes here.
All right. Push the button.
Joining us now, Mark Thiessen, who's a Fox News contributor and former chief speechwriter for President George W. Bush. Mark, great to see you.
It's great to
He's
see
got
you,
a point there, right? I mean, we heard people all night talking about how they remain baffled by Donald Trump, even this late in the game.
No, absolutely. And look, he's 100% right. His numbers did go up. I mean, just a few weeks ago, everyone was talking about how Trump had this ceiling of 35% of the electorate that was his hardcore supporters, but 65% wanted somebody else. And in fact, the truth is, up until tonight, he had gotten about 35% of the primary Republican primary vote. But tonight, Florida, he won by 46%. North Carolina is 40%. Illinois, 40%. Missouri, which is still neck and neck, he's around 43%. And there's a new national poll out now, the YouGov Economist poll, that for the first time has him winning a majority of Republican voters nationally, 53%. That's the first time he's ever had a real majority. That's up 9 points from a month ago when he was at 44%. So Trump, this ceiling is starting to crack, and Trump is expanding beyond that core base of 35%. There will be a lot of people out there who are looking and saying, okay, I can make peace with the idea of a Trump presidency. I might even be able to support Donald Trump as the nominee. So he's growing his support.
Winning begets winning, and people want to back a winner. And, you know, the more he focuses on Hillary Clinton, the more Republicans say, all right, I see him differently. The more he attacks Republicans, they think, well, I don't know. I want to ask you about the people who say, forget it. The Republicans have said tonight, forget it. I'm going to go third party. If it's Hillary versus Trump, I'm going third party.
Well, I'd like to see the path for a third-party candidate to actually win the presidency. Because if a third-party candidate runs and can't win the presidency, then the only purpose it serves is to give Republicans a way to deny Donald Trump the presidency.
They seem to know that. The people who say this seem to know that, and they say it would be a conscience vote.
Well, sure, because they don't want to actually have to pull a lever for Hillary Clinton, and they don't want to stay home. So this is an excuse. But what you're doing, unless there's a path to victory, you're essentially pulling the lever for Hillary Clinton. And that means Hillary Clinton gets to pick the next replacement for Justice Scalia. And there's a lot of things that go along with that. So this is a very, very tough situation for people, quite frankly, for people like me, who have not exactly been very enthusiastic about Donald Trump. And there's a lot of people out there who have to start realizing that you have to pick between the lesser of two evils at some point. They may have to end up deciding whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is the greater evil for the next 4 years.
Do you feel like you describe yourself as a very conservative guy? Do you feel like you can get behind Trump now? Do you feel that happening for you?
I've always said that I'll jump off that bridge when I get to it, and I'm not ready to jump yet. there's still a long way to go. Cruz has John Kasich prevented today. Donald Trump came this close to putting this whole thing away. Mm-hmm. If he had won both Florida and Ohio, it would have been over, basically. Mm-hmm. And Kasich stopped him. But Kasich doesn't have a path to the nomination. There's no way he gets to 1237. Ted Cruz probably can't get to 1237, but maybe the two of them combined can deny Trump enough votes to win the nomination outright. And so it's not a done deal yet. So, we could have a contested convention. We could have another outcome. So I think, we wait until the votes. If you get to the Stanley Cup final and you don't score the final goal and win, you don't win. And Donald Trump hasn't won yet.
But what would change the dynamic of the race? You know, I mean, yes, Ted Cruz has won some states. Donald Trump has won more. What would change the dynamic so greatly that in the states coming up, including New York, New Jersey, that Ted Cruz could surpass Trump?
He's going to have a hard time surpassing Trump in states like the ones you just described, which is why John Kasich staying in the race probably helps deny him that 1237. So Kasich has a chance to win, or at least take some of the delegates in some of those states if they're not winner take all. But it's a very hard path to stop him at this point, and it's going to get to a possibly the only outcome that stops Donald Trump from getting the nomination right now is stopping him from getting to 1237 and getting to the point where you have a contested convention.
Same question for you that I raised with David Plouffe. Do you believe these predictions of, the Republican Party dies if Donald Trump becomes the nominee, the party's never the same again, it's impossibly fractured?
No, I don't believe that. I think that, look, the ideas of conservatism and the conservative movement are going to survive. This is, I mean, Marco Rubio, I think, put it very well in his speech when he said we're in the midst of a tsunami. But tsunamis don't always often last. And so, you know, once the tsunami of Trump has ridden across the land and caused its destruction to the Republican Party, at some point, if he doesn't get the presidency, then someone will have to step up and rebuild and come back with a optimistic Reaganite approach to the party. But right now, it looks like the tsunami is flying with full force.
Maybe it'll be you.
I like my job working with you, Megan.
Ditto.
Okay. So there's more explanation, Fox News, them covering, talking about what they think is going on and who's, you know, Trump, why. I'm going to try and end this with anything you want to say about that before I... What I want to do is good. I'm going to go ahead and read this. This was written November 3rd, and the day before the election in 08. And I remember vaguely doing, I wanted to document this and kind of even before the election for people to understand my perspective, why I do what I do the way I do, and what I see is coming. Now, keep in mind, this was written, God, you know, 7 years ago, long time ago. This is the 08 election day before. We are freeing ourselves by Ernest Hancock. The general election of November 4th, 2008 will inform us once again that government has won. While the color, race, religion, and gender of the faces may change, the body, mind, and spirit of government will remain the same. But we have changed. The common understanding that Americans once had that government was to be a carefully watched servant that had no access to our peaceful private affairs has been supplanted. What was once a beacon to every individual on and possibly off the planet has devolved into an oppressor of mankind. The tyrannical regime that stomps in the halls of power throughout every government uses both their left and right jackboots of their jackboot-on-your-throat parties or regimes to enslave us. And they are not going away voluntarily. In just the last few days before this election, I have been stunned by several comments made from individuals that I thought much more immune to the standard manipulations of the political process. If I had to generalize, I would say that those over 30 are the most susceptible to fear and doubt. Younger individuals that have matured along with the internet have had their minds formatted to think more logically. Reason and logic, critical thinking, has been reintroduced into our culture through the minds of the young who have had their brains organized differently than those in power would have preferred. Expected reactions to traditional emotional stimulus aren't as effective as they once were, so the stimulus is increased. The threat will be more immediate and dire, and the perpetrators more different and foreign. Get ready for interstellar war propaganda. Predictions of scenarios that we may be faced with aren't difficult if you have a fundamental understanding of government as an entity in and of itself. Whenever I am asked my opinion about the likelihood of any number of dramas played out in the media that will result in increased power, scope, and intrusiveness of government, I always default to the understanding that if they can, they will. To think that our government, and government in general for that matter, has some sense of moral restraint demonstrates that you have not been paying attention. Lying and cheating and stealing and killing are all justified tactics in the effort to maintain and enhance the power of government to do the good that exists only in the minds of those in power. And I have to wonder how this can be so clearly demonstrated over decades, and some Americans can't be convinced that election fraud should be a primary concern for those that think voting is an effective tool. If election fraud can be done, it is being done. I have participated heavily in the political process every year since 1990 as a seeker of truth. Each of us has our own circumstances that prompted us to question authority, and each of us have a unique perspective on the world. Individual experiences, talents, personalities, and circumstances create their own opportunities for each of us to have an impact on our environment. Those that choose to educate their friends, family, and community about the truth of things are often helped by me, my family, and my friends without regard to government-reported vote totals. A freed mind is a very powerful thing, and the bad guys know it. This is why so much effort goes into the marketing of government through the media and the public government education system. It is November 3rd, 2008. The history of the presidential election of 2008 in the United States of America will be written by the millions of people that lived it. Now more than at any other time in human history, videos of media-ignored events, pictures of whole families directly involved, and testimonies of individuals of all types detailing what really happened will all blend to make clear the reasons why there was a revolution. The revolution may not be televised, but it has been internet documented in its entirety. Revolutions don't always have to be violent, but they do have to be clearly defined to be successful. Fighting against something can never be as successful as winning a conflict in support of a popular cause. Fighting against something can never be as successful as winning a conflict in support of a popular cause. What has pleased me the most over the last election cycle is the clarity of what has been supported. I am convinced that the spin on the election results of 2008 will have the least effect on the truth of what happened than any other election I am aware of. The unfiltered direct communication that each of us has had with each other in real time has changed our perception of the world and how it works. And any attempt to re-educate us as to what we personally experience will only add to our experiences and further inoculate us against further mind manipulations. We have all taken great steps towards a much brighter future. While many are most concerned with the changing of institutions and the circumstances around them, I focus on individuals. When the freeing of minds is your primary goal, the evil that is done by those that would enslave minds can be a very persuasive example of what needs to change and why. I've always been very supportive of the Declaration of Independence as a representation of humanity's possibilities. And the further we have slipped from the idea that any justification for any government is the defense of a peaceful individual to be left alone, the further we devolve culturally and spiritually, I do not fear humanity. I fear government and its effect on the growth of each of us into the individual entities that we are capable of being. The controversy that is certain to follow the elections of 2008 can be a distraction or a tool for individual growth. As you look back over the last couple of years, I hope you are able to realize how much you have grown as a person and can remember how many others you have helped enlighten. I don't know how someone can unlearn the truth once it is experienced. Many millions around the world have recently learned the language of liberty, and the world will never be the same. No matter how bad our circumstances may get, in the long run, I have great hope for the human race. At every level and on every part of the earth, there are more of us coming to the realization that freedom is the best answer to any question that we can conjure. Experiences with an unimaginable number of controls have prompted enough of us to understand that it is the effort to control others' peaceful behavior that is the source of much evil in our lives. This is a very powerful revelation that is increasingly embraced by individuals and feared by collectives. I can't think of any collective that's bigger than a family that isn't sustained by force or threat of force. Jail, hell, whatever. And families generally grow and evolve into more independent families. And I suspect that the trend for mankind will be towards smaller and smaller collectives until no coercive collective is tolerated for any length of time. Whenever I need encouragement, I go to my computer and search for the latest news in three categories: communication, transportation, and energy. This past weekend, just before the November 4th, 2008 elections, you will have noticed that these categories got some extra attention here on Freedom's Phoenix. I focus on these top three because they represent individual empowerment. Communication: speech, written language, printing press, telephone, telegraph, radio, television, satellite, internet. Transportation: animals, the wheel, watercraft, train, automobile, aircraft, spacecraft. Energy: fire, water, wind, steam, hydrocarbons, nuclear, solar, fill in the blank, coming soon. Progress is in each of these areas of human endeavor has netted us more freedom. And it is this very reason that we can understand the desire for governments to control our access to these advancements. Sooner than we all think, government will be seen by our grandchildren the same as printed newspapers, antiquated and irrelevant. Eventually, the option to live autonomously as a family in your 20,000 square foot self-contained Starship luxury home that you and your wife built with supplies from Starship Depot is coming. A year's worth of work that you did traveling around the world during your 20-hour work week in your Mach 20-whatever mobile will provide you a comfortable life with friends that span the solar system. Had it not been for the crushing effect of coercive government, we would have already have attained a far more advanced civilization technologically, intellectually, spiritually, and emotionally. And the bright future of our children and grandchildren is continually being stunted by human parasites that have managed to steal from them before they are even born. For these crimes, there is always a reckoning. This is where we are heading. The trend towards the elimination of rulers and con artists and bullies is obvious. This has been the direction we have been heading for millennia. No matter how much effort has been expelled to stop the evolution revolution. But what about the roads, you say? Where we're going, there aren't any roads or coercive government.